Blog Talk Radio. It is It is Friday, July 26, 2013.
This feels like a game.
And I'm Michael Lawson, along with Thomas Fortenberry. I'm sorry, it's the drugs I'm taking for. Oh, man, give me a break. The drugs. It's the drugs, Gianna. I had nothing to do with it. It's the drugs. Well, why didn't you stop taking it, Judge, the drugs? Because it was so good. It made me feel so good. Now, listen, I'm telling you, it's the drugs. I cannot. I got my third and final epidural yesterday.
I had one of the worst ones. 8 weeks minimum. And I February 15th is that. That's what it is. And I didn't get my first injection until April because of North Carolina over here. Well, it wasn't, it's not the hospital, but it's not the emergency. They do not know what they are doing. have put water on me. I have gained 8 pounds. It's got to go away because I'm not eating like I was. And the now that's it. Oh, I need to walk it for 3 weeks. No, but I spent this in the last 3 weeks I've been recovering. So, I mean, at least the guys, oh, man, I'm not great. So I am going to, now, the other thing that happened, I was just my heart said, I had to start it out. My heart was just I'm finished. Oh, well, the first thing you did was very good. I don't know that. But I got to the city and I got my job yesterday. Yes. So, they're happy to they did the job. And I'm the heart was down. It has been down to about 90 degrees. It's down. They jumped up, so, but the doctor, that's fine. You're going to be sometimes when you die, there's adverse factors, definitely adverse factors. When you die. Yes. Yeah, I don't like the dirty one. And the fire, I don't like either when you shoot me. That's no good. And yesterday, when I was there, what about you want to donate your organ? I said, today? Today? Are you kidding me? Donate my organ today? So that's what they say. Don't you go to the movies? Yes. I said, well, in the movies, there's not a I said, I told her, oh, oh yeah, this will be good. Absolutely. You know, the things will be a studio, but I think this will be good. Everything. They will not see the inside of it, in case you're deaf. Anyway, so, what's our lead story today? Yes. We got the weedy, weedy. We got weedy. I have something about that that was written out, and
what was your first vote?
My first vote was second-degree murder.
Second-degree murder.
In between the 9 hours, it was hard. A lot of us that wanted to find something bad, something that we could connect to the law. For myself, he's guilty because the evidence shows he's guilty.
He's guilty of
killing Trayvon Martin. But as the law was read to me, if you have no proof that he killed him intentionally, you can't say he's guilty.
Did you want to step out at all? Did you want to
quit?
I
was the juror that was going to give him the hung jury. Oh, I was. I fought to the end. I mean, it's hard for me to sleep. It's hard for me to eat because I feel that I was forcibly included in Trayvon Martin's death. And as I carry him on my back, I'm hurting as much as Trayvon Martin's mommy. Because there's no way that any mother should feel that pain.
That was just a short interview. Now, listen, I don't want to hear that. First thing is, the judge did not do her duty. She did not give them the correct charge. Second thing is, the prosecutor attorney screwed up when they selected this woman. They selected her because she had 8 children, because she would be incapacitated. But they did do that with the rest of them. There wasn't one single black on that jury. But they did have a wife of a prominent Florida attorney on there, and that never should have been allowed. Because I am a lawyer, but I played one in school. The thing is that they will take the great film 12 Angry Men. It was 11 guilty and 1 not guilty. And I'm talking about the original film, The Henry Fonda, not that ripoff that was colored with those other people, because it isn't that. Anyway, I should turn my phone down. Well, the thing is, in 12 Angry Men, there was, as I said before, 11 to the victim and 1 not to the victim. Henry Fonda turned that all around to make it 12 for convict and to let free. Now, so when you say that, oh, that's impossible, you can't turn it around. Yes, you can, if it's done the correct way, if you have somebody in there that can lead. And they had somebody in there that led them to a conviction. Because the wrong one thing that B-29 says is we could not convict them because we didn't show intent. That is absolute wrong. Absolutely wrong. They sent a letter out to the judge asking her to explain what manslaughter would be. And the judge refused to give her that answer. The judge said, send her back a letter, what do you want to know about manslaughter? If they knew what manslaughter was about, they never would have asked her in the first place. So when they didn't get an answer, they said, the one who needed it, and it had to be his lawyer's wife.
Yep.
It had to be this lawyer's wife, and I think I hope we were on because this thing was pulled. But anyway, it had to be this lawyer's wife who led them for all conviction because the what B-29 said about we couldn't show intent, you know, that's not necessary with manslaughter because you can be drunk and hit somebody while you're driving and it's manslaughter. You did not intentionally kill that person. And this just isn't in this state. That's the definition of manslaughter. Manslaughter is when you can't help it. You do not show intent, or they can't prove intent.
That's my biggest problem with this entire jury and or trial.
Right.
I thought that was so. I thought the entire point of the trial was to determine if it was manslaughter or murder.
Right.
Not to determine if someone
got free. We know he shot him.
We
know he shot him. It's just like taking the car and running somebody over.
Right.
We know he ran the person over.
Right.
He is guilty. Now, did he do it on purpose?
Were you backing up and
right.
you accidentally ran over the person, or did you ram through him?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, tell him.
It is.
Yeah.
It literally is a case of, I think, miscarriage of justice
all the way around.
They either misunderstood or the judge misinstructed them or something because somehow it got off onto did it even occur and is he even guilty of doing anything and let it go.
I am saying that it was rigged from the beginning to get this man off. Remember, Zimmerman's father is a judge. This judge who was told to be a no-nonsense judge never gave the direction, the charge, what they call it, to the jury, explaining to them what manslaughter was. Now, maybe that's not her job to explain what manslaughter is, but she explained to them about the self-defense law. She explained about stand your ground law, and this case was not supposed to be about stand your ground.
Right.
And it wasn't supposed to be about the self-defense because he did not claim self-defense. He claimed that he shot him because he was in fear of his life, not self-defense. That word never was uttered from the defense attorney. So the judge, let's go start with the prosecutor. The prosecutor, I think, did a great job explaining to the jury in his final summation and got them. He had a feeling of final summation. He wanted to have them feel, and this woman felt. But he did not explain to them, if you can't charge him with murder, we know he did it. It's manslaughter.
Right.
He did it. And he did not intend to do it, but he did it. Now, I'm saying he intended to do it.
Right.
Because according to Stand Your Ground, and even though Stand Your Ground is not part of the story, if he could find a way to back out and get away, he was supposed to do that. He did not. And see, the other thing is, the prosecutor attorney, I believe, blew it. He did not say the gun was in the small of his back, so Trayvon couldn't see it. I believe that Zimmerman shot Trayvon Martin standing up. They were both standing up.
Yeah.
And that's what happened with Trayvon Martin.
Also, I know that this is, we're trying the whole thing here. But,
yes, we are.
The problem I had from the get-go is this guy had a extensive history
yes.
of profiling.
Absolutely.
He called, what it was, 400-something times.
Right. That was never used.
And about all this type of stuff. And then, on this case directly, he hunted down, followed Daniel Trayvon, and even called the police, and they told him, stop, don't do it.
you know, I mean, the 911 operators were doing that. So it makes you, I mean, it makes you realize from the get-go he was in the wrong. And I think it's a miscarriage of justice that they didn't instruct the jury properly. But it wasn't. Did he intentionally go after him like a serial killer and want to eat his face, or is he free? The question was, he murdered him intentionally, or he accidentally killed him. Which is it? And it wasn't. He didn't do anything. Goodbye. You know, you're out of, you know, here's your get out of jail free card. But that's exactly the intention of this law. And so it worked like a charm. And that's why you've seen all the NRA and everybody else high-fiving themselves, because this is their intention. Their intention is to give people free license to shoot without fear of prosecution.
Let's hear a little more from Jura B-29.
If I stand by the decision because of my heart, he would have been guilty.
I know that you've heard some people have said point blank, they've said George Zimmerman got away with murder. How do you respond to those people who say that?
George Zimmerman, got away with murder, but you can't get away from God. And at the end of the day, he's going to have a lot of questions and answers he has to deal with. The law couldn't prove it, but you know the world goes in circles.
He got away with murder. She says it, she knows it, but she was turned by that one juror. And, you know, hey, listen, that's the process in the jury room. That's how it's played. If you want your see, here's the other thing. These were probably established women. Well, this woman, she has 8 children. So, and I am sure that they ganged up on her because they didn't want murder. Well, 2 of them shouldn't have ganged up because they wanted manslaughter. Why didn't they help get her to manslaughter? How do you jump? Right. Right.
I just don't understand this whole process that somehow he's gotten off because he's not guilty of, you know, just
nothing.
Hunting the guy down and shooting him.
He followed him.
Right.
So what does that mean? I don't have the right to knock you off and on your butt because you're following me?
Well, this is the problem that I had with the juror, the first one that spoke, the one that, you know, was so proud that they got him off. She said directly that she was swayed by poor Mr. Zimmerman being frightened by the large, gigantic black child.
Oh, yeah, 140 pounds.
You know. So this, you know, he
skinny,
was
gigantic.
You know, this is the whole thing is ludicrous. But remember her whole thing, like, oh, he was fearful, so obviously he had to defend himself. That's her excuse. And on it's again, how come stand your ground applies to Zimmerman,
but it don't apply to Drayvon?
He stalked a child all the way across a subdivision as he's trying to get to his, you know, house. The kid's scared to death. So even if, worst case scenario, he turns around and pops Zimmerman in the face and knocked him on his ass, which probably happened, that's his defense.
Right.
He was being stalked by some strange, you know, dude with, turns out, a weapon. That is the
best. I got a question to ask you. Do you think George Zimmerman would have got out of the car if he didn't have a gun? You mean?
Look, that's the thing.
You mean Wolverine wouldn't have got out of the car unless he had his nails?
Look, I said from the get-go, this guy, Mr. Defender of the Neighborhood, is the biggest wuss I've ever heard of in my life, that he felt so threatened, even if you take him at his word. That's just his defense, so he doesn't go fry. But he felt so threatened by a child walking with a pack of Skittles, you know, and a Slurpee, talking to his girlfriend or whatever. He's so threatened by that he runs and he kills the guy. You know, I mean, that's pathetic. It's pathetic. And the fact that this guy is like a professional or whatever that's defending the neighborhood and going around with guns and he's doing the training.
Which is illegal.
Yeah, but what kind of training? What kind of anything did he? I mean,
didn't have training.
Are you kidding me?
Trained himself. And here's the thing. And the other thing is that, so Zimmerman went to a Skittles fight and he brought a gun. Is that right?
Yeah.
He went to a Skittles fight and brought a gun. Well, you know, those Skittles can hurt you. No, it was really that can, or is it a bottle of soda? That really hurt me. Maybe that's why his face was so bloody. He hit him with the can.
Yeah.
Could have been.
Could have been.
Should have checked his clothes for that iced tea. But anyway.
Yeah, you never know. Quick draw Coca-Cola.
So now we have, they said, it's a.
Here's the thing now. I don't care and I don't want to hear from these jurors.
Yeah.
No,
right. I don't want to hear that.
Yeah. They're just trying.
But you see.
They know they did wrong and they're trying to, like, you know.
Well, no, she's the only one that says she did wrong. The rest of them ain't even talking. Because
the one of them came out and said,
yeah, but that's the one who originally thought
right.
Goodman was. And she's the lawyer. The lawyer's daughter, wife.
Right.
So this is just completely outrageous. This, the daggone press, you had 500 people to choose, and these are the 500 people they got? No African-Americans on the jury. But they did get one person, but that one person was weak. Weak, and could not stand up for what she thought. She said, if we can't convict him because he didn't intend to do it, then he's innocent. But it doesn't say that. That is wrong. In manslaughter, you do not have to intend to kill somebody.
That is the definition.
That's the definition of manslaughter. And when they gave that to the judge refused to give them back the definition. All she would have to say is, here's the definition of manslaughter. Because they asked her, what's the definition of manslaughter? She gave them back and said, what do you mean? What do you mean? That was a setup right there. But she was supposed to be, you know, hang them high. Yeah.
This is one thing that bothers me.
Yeah.
Leave the whole thing because I could talk all day about
right.
the Trayvon tragedy. But we talked about this a little bit last show.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not in the case of Trayvon, let's drop that for a second. But look at the totality,
right.
the impact
right.
of Stand Your Ground.
Mm-hmm.
And you said yourself, I mean, there's something like, what, 78% chance of if you shoot a minority, you get off?
If you shoot a non-minority, you have a 56% chance to get off.
Right.
If you shoot an African-American, you have a 79% chance to get off.
So right there.
What are we talking about here?
Well, right there, you can see that the law.
Misapplied everywhere.
Because you couldn't have that much of disparity.
Well, it's just like rock cocaine and powder cocaine.
Right.
I mean, if you're smoking powder, if you're doing sniffing with powder cocaine, you get 1 or 2 years. If you rock cocaine, it's 10. What are we talking about here? What are we talking about here?
Because people in the suburbs don't commit crime. Only people in the ghettos commit crimes.
Well, and if you want to call in, you can call in at 646-716-5242. But you better hurry up because we've got people going to be calling in here in a minute.
But again, this is a you can see that it's an abused law and a flawed law if it
right.
can have that much disparity. Now, if you're talking about like over the courses of this law's history or whatever, we can look at it and we see a, you know, 0.03 variant of application. You see, it's a fairly accurate
right.
law.
Right.
But when you're talking 30% spread, you know, it's like,
I mean,
it's criminal.
And
you can see the intent of it is to get people.
Let me just repeat that thing again. I did do that quite fast. That's 646-716-5242. Anybody that would like to call in. But you only have about another 20 minutes because we are going to be engaged with a lot of people. So you have about 15 minutes. 646-716-5242. Now, what does Section 3 say? Do you have found that yet?
Oh, I did.
Okay, what does Section 3 say?
But there's a couple of things they said about it. One, the two acts that they can use, Section 2 and Section 3. Section 2 gives is one of the permanent sections, by the way. You know, there's nothing you can do about certain things. And if you disenfranchise, you're toast, no matter what. But Section 3, and by the way, this is one neat thing about Section 2, about discrimination. It says that you don't even have to
prove the intent, which is neat.
Right.
So if he
accidentally
the,
did it, oh, still goes.
Too bad.
That's
right?
Almost like manslaughter, right?
Now, yeah. But so here's in Section 3, they're saying that they've got a it's a limited remedy.
Right.
But the problem with the Supreme Court, if everybody remembers, so we're going to jump track real quick.
The Supreme Court got rid of five, though, right? Or four.
They struck down five.
Struck down five.
Or parts of five. But it's what they struck down is the state's mapping.
Right.
So
the formula.
Redo. So
the formula.
It's throwing it out. But
they want to change the formula.
One provision. Yeah, they
right.
said you need to restructure the way you
right.
look at this.
And we know the Senate and the House are not going to do that.
Section 3 does allow federal judges to look at a state and like its history,
mm-hmm.
and they can still, especially if prior to anything that's happened, but if they have disenfranchised minorities in the past and they've done this.
Does it say how many years in the past?
Zonings, not on this.
I thought it was like 5 years.
Yeah, I think it does go back quite a bit. It's not like just a few month thing. It goes
right.
back and looks at previous elections, but it has a pattern.
Right.
But it says if you're doing that, then you can be held. You're held by the law no matter what.
So you think when Texas closed every single voting place, I think 112 voting places, and now has five in the whole state, which Texas is probably one of the biggest states in the it is the biggest state in the country, you know, outside of Alaska. You think that is when all the like
the thing it does?
Yeah,
it
the
gives
minority communities have one voting poll, which is 25 miles from the house.
Right.
What do you think about that?
And this is the limited part of that. The only thing it does is it reinstates that pre-clearance condition. They have to be pre-cleared.
Well, that means they can't do that.
But here's the thing: before they can change laws, they have to pre-clear.
Right.
That's what they're going to try to enforce. And
right.
The only place that they can really effectively do that is Texas.
No, North Carolina now too.
I don't know.
North Carolina is right on the – well, see now
– Texas, because they had just gotten through that case and
right.
been found guilty
well,
again.
Yeah, but you see, it will apply to everywhere. You don't have to try it in each state.
Well, with that case, it was Texas versus –
yes.
You know, so
right.
they said that in Texas
– and that was in June 11th?
For sure.
That was 2011?
Right. They're
right.
going to be able to for sure get them on Section 3
because
right. they instantly – you remember the day after went, ha-ha, we're going
to – well, they North Carolina did before them. They did it, 3 weeks after the governor was elected.
Right. But again, I don't know. The only problem with it is they don't – this whole – I'm reading a whole article on the Texas side of it, and they said that only a few states like Alabama and South Carolina and Texas kind of are at risk here. They don't mention North Carolina.
Yeah.
Maybe that's
yet.
Because it hadn't –
because it hadn't happened yet. That's correct.
So
right.
We'll have to see. But if this is
– well.
If this is a model that we can use, then we can perhaps stop the North Carolina changes. Because right now, what we're talking about is North Carolina is ramrodding through substantial election, what they call reform,
right.
change. And they're doing things like limiting the number of days you can vote, limiting the access and the amount of locations you can vote, and limiting your ability to get any kind of waiver or vote from home, and
they're limiting you no longer handicap voting.
Right.
You will have to go inside to do your voting.
Right.
They're going to if you don't live in this state and you're from another state, you can't vote here. If you do, your parents will lose their tax exemption. There's at least three of those out of the four that we mentioned that are federally controlled,
right.
and they cannot do it statewide.
Right.
So that's going to be out.
Yeah, I mean, this trouble is going to be a huge loss.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be lawsuits up the yin-yang, but what they're trying to do is they don't care.
They don't care.
They're trying to get to this next midterm election.
They want. But you see, if a lawsuit goes through, that don't mean it's going to be settled that day. So that
right.
means that it will stay as it is right now. So that's what – see, the thing is that I believe and I think they did a great job, Eric Holder, by not pressing them and forcing these states to do this 6 months ago. I think he planned this perfectly timed where we're this close to the election that if he put in a lawsuit, it would take more than a year to get there, and these people would not be, they will have to operate on the same premise as it is right now. First of all, any lawsuit, anything that is, that interrupts or counteracts a national election is federal, and federal jurisdiction trumps state jurisdiction all the way, every time.
Right.
So when they tell you that you you're handicapped and you have to walk into a voting place and you can't get out of your car and they don't have it's not going to be wheelchair access, they are breaking a federal law. So that's going to be counteracted. They're also breaking a federal law when they tell you that if your child goes to school in one state but lives in another state and he can't vote in the same state that he's going to school, that's a federal law if they want to take away your tax exemption.
Yeah.
All right? Now, they might be able to take away – I don't know if they can take away any of it.
No.
But because the federal government is the one that passed that law.
You know, but also half the time the Republicans do things, A, they either do things they know are illegal.
Yeah, of course.
Or temporary, so
that absolutely.
They can do it and get away
that's
with
just to, just the humor that the teabaggers that are listening.
But the other thing they do, though, they're masters of this, is they sow confusion and fear.
Right.
And even the fear of it, you know, there's tons of students, even if it's overturned in court, that the parents nod, just don't vote. Don't do anything to
right.
You know, don't mess up the status. You know, we can't afford it. You know, don't do anything. And it's just going to cause that ripple effect that, say, it only affects, you know, 30% of the people, you know, don't do it because they're scared of their status. Whatever. But that they just suppress the vote, 30%, just like that. All the student vote, you know, because they threaten to take away your money.
Do I have a...
Well, here's the thing. Just to let you know, Mike, real quick. So Section 2... They said that you can is a much broader and easier statute because it says you can stop anybody from doing anything that will adversely affect a minority vote in the future. So any changes you're doing or anything else you do, if it will have the effect of hurting them, it's a violation. Whereas Section 3, and this is the catch with Section 3, is that Section 3 says that you have to intend to do it. And so that's the only problem. That's why they say it's going to be harder to prove, and they only have really good cases in things like Texas where they have a substantial history of them trying to do this on purpose and losing in court and stuff. So it'll be interesting to see, but at least we'll have an option. You know, at least they'll have a remedy perhaps for this debacle of throwing out Provision 5 mapping. At least we can hope that they do. Now, as Mike wanders around the studio here, I'll keep going. So we've got here's an interesting side note, Mike. You'll love this. Our favorite Supreme Court Justice, John Roberts, he says, proving intent's not easy, right? And he was the one that when they changed the Voting Rights Act in 1982 in Congress, that said they defined that any change that will have the quote-unquote effect of disenfranchising minorities is discriminatory. He was in the Reagan Justice Department, and he was one of the lawyers that vigorously opposed this and tried everything in his power to get it struck down. And I think that's hysterical that now this comes back to bite him because, you know, he's made his entire career trying to wipe out the advancements of civil rights. And he's done a good job, you know, here. He's damaged the civil rights bill immensely. But I think it's funny that something he fought vigorously against in 1982 and lost on the case is now going to be the remedy to his hobbling the Civil Rights Act on striking 5 down. So Section 2 is going to come back to bite him, and I just think that's just a little
Section 2 will come back to bite him good. Hey, you know what I did?
Guys,
I think I loaded the wrong information on the show. because that's last week's. What is the?
Well, we can. We'll be able to wing it. It's okay.
Well, that's right. All right, so go on.
No, I was just talking about our you know favorite boy John Roberts. I just think that, and also this is something, by the way, just like pointing that out. This is something he was doing in 1982, working for Reagan. He was the one that's trying to strike down the Civil Rights Act then,
mm-hmm.
right? He
right, that's what Reagan got him in to get rid of the right.
This is why people, I know that it's hard to pay attention to everything. It's just so much going on all the time, blah, blah, blah. You know, it all sounds the same. But if you would just do a little bit of, you know, diligence when election times come around and stuff and start paying attention, it would save the country. It would save our future because these people don't pop out of thin air. And when you get something like George W. Bush in power, who can appoint Supreme Court justices, and then the choices of people like John Roberts, he didn't just go in and draw a name out of a hat, you know, on Saturday evening and, hey, who's this guy, John Roberts? I don't know. Let's put him in. These guys, you know, have been working for decades together. They have, you know, a concerted agenda, and they have all their little think tanks and stuff. And that's why, you know, recently the other one of our favorite justices, Roberts, you know, back during the last election was getting in trouble because it turned out that he and his wife actively worked on campaigns.
Absolutely.
You know, and sat here and worked with, like, the Koch brothers and everything else to not only advocate for candidates, but they actively worked on promoting laws, changing laws, promoting industry standards, and things that were affecting cases and law in the Congress, but even more importantly, were affecting cases that came before the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
And when it was revealed, this justice refused to step down. I mean, he refused to do anything. He sat on the cases anyway and said, oh, I can be partial. It's like you're putting money, time, effort, and your wife is employed by the person that you're supposed to be impartially judging at the Supreme Court. I mean, this is ridiculous. But, again, paying attention a little bit goes a long way because though a lot of people were totally horrified and shocked by the Civil Rights Act being struck down, we saw this stuff coming for 20, 30 years. They've been hammering at it, you know. They've been sitting here chopping at the tree, and eventually they, you know, severed a root or whatever. But it, again, just pay attention. This stuff doesn't come out of thin air.
Now, what I'm going to do, we're going to give you some more, but we're going to play some stuff here for you. And let's see here. So I can download this because well, we had pulled up the wrong script for today. That's what we did. And
well, that's okay.
What I'm going to do is let me go back to
There are crowds
there are. Now, I'm gonna play for you here. This was an interview. I was up at Moral Monday on Monday, which is what they're doing now.
Explain a little bit for the.
Moral Monday is where, and I'm telling you now. This is really incredible. It started probably because this has been going on for 11 weeks now.
Yeah, it started with McCrory getting in power and starting to.
Well, it started when they started pushing the abortion rights, cutting women, the centers out for women to go to the Planned Parenthood, when they would wanted to change the law for the strict voter ID. People, I mean, that was just the two basic things. So people got out and said, well, we want every protest and get arrested every Monday.
Right.
So what they did was, the first group of people they had there was 50 people, approximately 50 people. And they were out there. They protested until the session was over, starting to vote like 7 o'clock. And then they marched over to the legislature. This was up in Raleigh. And the people protested, and some got arrested.
Right.
People, when they started complaining, and I can say that the NAACP state chairman, Reverend Barber, has done a fantastic job. He has brought in fabulous people to push this along. Organizations like the Advancement Project, which Reverend Edward Hales is the general manager and managing the general counsel and managing director.
Right.
And they have offices all over the country, about six or seven, I think, in L.A. and in Washington, New York, a lot of big places. And they are...
I'm going to also tell you one thing, by the way. I was looking it up, helping the Post had a report lately. The latest polls coming out of North Carolina, Moral Mondays movement has now surpassed the legislature in popularity of any political figure in North Carolina.
Yeah, well, hey, I can tell you, the Moral Monday has been really fantastic. The people have come out and, well, I mean, let me get back to explaining. So what they did was they, the following Monday, they're going to go up there every Monday until these right-wing bigots would see the light,
right,
knowing that they may never see the light, but they did it anyway. So the second week, they had about 1,000 people out there, from 50 to 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Every week it has grown. There was an estimated crowd between 8 and 10,000 out there this Monday. And out of the eight, now, you have to figure what they want to do is, the idea about changing all these voting rights is to reduce the African-American vote. The African-American vote, especially in North Carolina, is about 28%. So if they can keep that 28% down to 10%, and they can get rid of the Hispanic vote by not even letting them be allowed to vote, that's another 30%, another 20% that they can get rid of. So their thing is that in a non-presidential election, everybody decreases in the amount of people that come to vote. So they figure that they will be able to decrease the amount of people coming to vote by decreasing the amount of people that voted against them.
Right.
And that would help inflate, not physically or numerically, but it would inflate their people to have a higher vote total. That's what this is all about, is to probably to give a decreasing amount of voting, because they know it's like, who was I talking to? I was talking to my doctor when we were talking about this. And I said, you know, the Republicans know they're dead. And you know, but they're still out there just like a snake snapping and biting you and putting your venom in you. So what you do is you chop the head of the snake off, but you notice one thing. The snake is still moving.
Yeah.
We have chopped the head off this snake already. But this is the body that's still moving. They're dead and they don't know it. So they're going to move back and forth for a while. They're going to move back and forth for a while, but that's all. They know this is eventually, this is their last draw. I mean, but you have leaders in the Republican Party who are now starting to show a little gumption and say, look, we can't go down this trail. They had that fool, where is this fool? Did I record that? It was an interview with Steve King. You know, Steve King is from Idaho, Representative Steve King. And he was being interviewed by, he was being interviewed, I didn't record it, by Fox's O'Reilly. And O'Reilly says, you know, you really need to move to get more Hispanics behind you. He says, no, we don't. We don't have to do. We don't do any of that. We don't have to do anything. We need to keep on doing what we're doing, because that's the only way that we are going to get what we deserve. And he said, yes, but what you deserve, you might not like. And he said, well, can't you just ease up on the? He said, no, we need to have the wall. We need to have barbed wire on the wall. He said, but is that even realistic? He said, what about he said, no, we need to have also, they can come in here, they can do their jobs, but they got to go home. They can't stay here. He said, well, you know, that's not realistic. We're in a bad place now. He says, no, we are not in a bad place. And this is the type of morality you see with these fool's running.
Which is, again, just let's...
It's the snake body moving with the snake head off.
The labor, let's get all the profit out of them and then just ship the bodies back so we don't have to do anything like
right, that. Right, absolutely.
Or house them or anything else. I mean, yeah. it's like slave labor.
Now you heard what Stephen King said before. Let me just play this a little bit.
And that doesn't mean that there aren't groups of people in this country that, that I have sympathy for. I do. And there are kids that were brought into this country by their parents unknowing that they were breaking the law. And they will say to me and others who defend the rule of law, we have to do something about the 11 million. And some of them are valedictorians. Well, my answer to that is, and by the way, their parents brought them in. It wasn't their fault. It's true in some cases, but they aren't all valedictorians. They weren't all brought in by their parents. For everyone who's a valedictorian, there's another 100 out there that they weigh 130 pounds and they've got calves the size of cantaloupes because they're hauling 75 pounds of marijuana across the desert. Those people would be legalized with the same act. And until the folks that want to open the borders and grant this amnesty can define the difference between the innocent ones who have deep ties with America and those who have been, I'll say, undermining our culture and civilization and profiting from criminal acts, until they can define that difference, they should not advocate for amnesty for both good and evil.
Again, there's,
I mean, what else can you say when you have a moron like that? What else can you say?
So it's maybe a valedictorian in there somewhere, but in between, there's nothing but drug dealers and stuff.
Absolutely. So now, these are the people that they are. Now, let me tell you, here's something. Chris Matthews went ballistic on this. Let me tell you what Chris Matthews said.
About the king of the crazies, U.S. Congressman Steve King, Republican of Iowa. So he goes through the records, documents the newspaper announcements of President Obama's birth in Hawaii, but continues to push the birther case. This maker of laws continues to maintain that the President of the United States wasn't born in the United States, that somehow a white woman from Kansas married a guy from Kenya, then went over with him to Kenya to have the baby they named Barack Hussein Obama with the purpose of having the kid grow up to be our American president. She did all this with the cooperation of the Immigration Service, who were in on the plan again to make this about-to-be infant the President of the United States a half century later. Any sane person would ask the question, if this woman from Kansas had this idea to have her son elected president, would she A, marry a guy from East Africa, B, schedule the delivery of their baby in East Africa, C, take the boy with her to Indonesia for several years, and D, create a false paper trail, including newspaper announcements that place the child's birth in a state far from the North American mainland? The king of the crazies has an interesting way of thinking, of course. He asks why anyone would want to outlaw dog fighting or cock fighting or anything like it when we allow humans to fight. Is there a trick in that question? Obviously, people might actually who fight decide to fight. Animals are thrown into an arena, perhaps in someone's garage, and prodded into fighting. Is that difference too cool for school? He says a sexual predator can impregnate a 13-year-old, which he says happens more times than you would know, haul her across the state line and force her to get an abortion, bring her back and drop her off at the playground where he found her. What kind of a country is this? He implores us to think. Well, Mr. King of the Crazies, it's not here. The only thing both weird and real in these stories of yours is the real-life U.S. congressman out there telling them.
Well,
yeah, look, this
how close is that to being true?
Look, I've said it for years. These guys, with their all Republicans, I don't know what the deal is, but they're, well, not all Republicans.
They're all Republicans.
But these ultra-conservative.
But you got to remember, see, this is the thing. There's a problem with it. The daggone legitimate party is making these ultra-conservative crazies run the party.
Right.
Because they thought that it's like the old story about laying in bed with the tiger.
Yeah.
You're laughing on the outside, you'll be laughing on the inside very shortly.
Yeah.
And this is what happened.
Well,
they don't know how to stop it.
They don't know how to stop it. But now we got these people in here, and it is kind of sad. I mean, just like that comment alone, I mean, this weird thing about, dragging children around and raping them and having abortions with them.
I mean,
what they're always obsessed with, like,
sex and perversion.
It's very strange. And I think it's interesting that when they also, speaking of morality, they like to preach morality all the time while they,
like, you know, the Texas governor famously claiming that he's gonna he's a moral person, so he's trying to end the murder of children, and then he's presiding over the record.
Right.
So you've got these guys, but they're so weird that even when they do something like, well, we're going to try to enforce, you know, anti-abortion laws and different things like that, the way they do it is by forced, invasive vaginal probes, you know, and things like that. It's like, what is wrong with y'all? Why is it always this weird, like, you know, rape culture thing going on with them? I don't get it. It's very disturbing, though. But no, they don't have respect for anybody. Like, you're talking about Moral Mondays earlier.
Yeah, and matter of fact, I'd like to play an interview they did on Moral Monday right now when I get this other thing set up here.
Well, I'm talking about Tom, you know, Tom Goolsbee there in our Congress.
Yeah.
This Republican tool. When he was asked recently about the Moral Mondays when they were getting so big and all that,
right.
he went off. He started ranting and raving. He said it's nothing but angry hippies. Right, and he said it's a circus full of clowns, and then he also said that they're all idiots. They're nothing but they're the moron Mondays. They're all morons. So this is the level of now. This is sits on high making the laws of North Carolina, and this is his speech. This is how derogatory it is. You know, instead of wondering why tens of thousands of his citizens that he supposedly is representing.
Mm-hmm.
Or protesting against it, he just sits up there, you know, screaming names and you know, saying you're a bunch of hippie clowns, and you know, they have no respect for anyone, and they don't care about any opinion or any fact or anything other than what they want to hear or want to say.
Right.
Which is, you know, where we also get, you know, my famous one from my friend back home that I always told you. He used to always, you know, he's a very evangelical kind of guy. And his statement with anything that came up to contradict what he wanted to believe, he would say, hey, dude, you and all that science stuff, you know. He said, well, you got your facts.
Science?
I got my facts. That's the way it's like they're two different, you know. He said, you can have your facts, but I got my facts, you know. And I'm like, there's no distinct fact is a fact, dude. You know, you can't pick and choose a fact, and you can't make one up. And, you know, that's why it's called a fact.
You mean a fact is a fact, and that's that.
But it's interesting that these people, they don't have any intellectual discourse at all.
Well, let's just listen to this. It's a little long, about 7 minutes long, but it's some of the interviews.
This is you up
there? Yeah, this is some. Yeah, Monday.
You up there at the Moral Monday.
Right. It was hot as hell. And then, so I was going with the chair of the party, and, you know, while I was doing this, I erased him.
Genius.
I erased that, so wow. Sorry, Randy, but let's just play a little bit of this right here. This is Michael Lawson again back at Moral Mondays. And why are you here? I'm here with
Veronica Bidding.
And Veronica, where are you from?
I'm originally from Winston-Salem. I'm an alumnus of Winston-Salem State University, and I reside here in Raleigh, North Carolina.
And I just saw you grab our Democratic leader as you walked by.
Representative Hall.
Yes, sir. What do you think about today? Is this your first Moral Monday?
No, sir. I was actually here on Monday, April 30th, when a good friend of mine and my former pastor, Reverend Dr. John Mendez, was arrested among 16 others. So I've been here every Monday since April 30th.
Well, what do you think? This has grown, hasn't it?
Oh, yes. That first evening, I think there may have been 100 of us outside. Now it's as many as 8,000. So I've seen the growth, witnessed the growth.
And I noticed there is a rainbow of people out here.
Yes, pretty diverse crowd, and it has become more diverse since April 30th, 2013. And, I mean, multi-faith. This is an interfaith effort. You know, I've seen Jewish, Muslim, Christian, people that I actually know. So it's been pretty inspirational. You know, I think one thing I said to a friend of mine is that traveled here from Asheville is that every country on the planet Earth has been represented during Monday, Moral Mondays.
Well, you know, do you think it's because I'm going to give you a couple of things because of the voting rights that want to be taken from us. Do you think it's because they want to put women back to the 1750s with rights, with having children, the choice to have children or not? Do you think it's because of the economy? What do you think it's for?
I think it is multiple reasons, sir. I think it has a lot to do with the rights of women to make choices concerning their bodies, their physical bodies, their spiritual selves, their emotional selves, everything in every aspect of women. You strike a woman, you strike a rock, for one. And secondly, I think voting rights actually, the issue of voting rights and the inability to vote actually impacts the lives of every home, every family represented here, in addition to the unemployment issue. No jobs are being created, but our governor and our legislative body has proposed to reduce maximum benefits to $350 for 12 weeks. It is impossible to find a job if they're not creating any, or anyone is creating any.
Well, has there been any bills in this legislative session that has to do with job creation?
No, none that I know of. I do know that the governor's wife proposed ensuring the rights of puppies and puppy mills. I know she's very interested in the rights of puppies and dogs, but people, that's a totally different issue. So as far as health care, one of the huge issues that I neglected to mention earlier was the lack of expansion of Medicaid. That's very important because once you lose your job and your health care benefits, you know what the regulations are right now. You can be actually labeled as having a pre-existing condition if you don't have medical coverage for 1 year, and it's almost impossible for you to get coverage.
Well,
you finally get a job and go back to work.
Well, I don't want to cut you off there, but you know, I just went, matter of fact, I had a bad sciatica attack, and this was since February 15th, Valentine's Day, until today is the first day I have been out by myself. Now, the first day, my wife took me to the emergency room. They gave me an x-ray. They gave me some hydrocodone, sent me home.
Mm-hmm.
That bill was $1,500. That did not include the doctor.
Wow.
The doctor was another $550. So how can someone who's on an income, unemployment, with no income, pay that bill? They don't. Who pays the bill? You and I, who work. So why would they want? And that, why would they want to pay an emergency hospital $2,000 when they could pay $400? I mean, it doesn't make sense. It's not cost effective.
One thing, and I didn't mean to cut you off. I too had a bout with sciatica. I'm a reasonably healthy person. I'm on no medication, but I had a bout with sciatica, and including the visits to all of these doctors who could not really diagnose and properly treat me, my bills exceeded $4,000.
Well, this was just the first day we made.
Oh, yeah.
This was the first day.
Yeah, yeah.
The one visit. But so I hope you're better now.
I am. I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing really good, actually.
Is that right?
But yeah, you know, healthcare should be a right and not a privilege just for a few, you know, not for just those who sit in our legislative offices who can afford it, who are properly cared for it and receive the health care that people like you and I aren't privileged to. It's actually becoming a privilege to have health care in North Carolina, and something's wrong with that.
Well, I have a cousin who lives in Canada. She says, I got no problem with it because I don't pay.
Right. We may pay a little more taxes, but we will pay if we're adequately treated, if we're treated fairly, and receive what we pay for. But
well,
here in North Carolina, it's like taxation without representation.
Well, the taxes would not be what it costs for 1 day visit to the emergency room.
Mm-hmm. I would prefer that my taxes went to underwrite or pay the funds necessary to extend Medicaid rather than to pay for big tax cuts for the wealthy, for corporations, for Pat McCrory's friends.
Well,
I would prefer to pay for people's taxes.
I'm from Mecklenburg County, Charlotte.
Oh,
Pat McCrory was our mayor.
You know him.
His wife didn't mention anything about puppy mills when she was down there.
Right.
So, right. I don't understand this. As a matter of fact, Pat McCrory was, or a lot of Democrats have voted for him. That's why he got in.
Right.
Because he wasn't that bad in Charlotte.
Really?
Yeah, because he had no power. That's a weak mayorship.
Yeah.
And we control the county commission and the city council. So he couldn't have done anything if he wanted to. And he's mad at us because we prevented him from getting elected two times as governor.
Exactly. Which will probably happen this time, I'm hoping. You know, our governor, Pat McCrory, also mentioned that the recent New York Times article, North Carolina in Decline, was riddled with errors. Pat McCrory's candidacy and service, quote-unquote service as mayor, is riddled with lies.
That's right.
I'm
and
still waiting for him to show up out here amongst us regular people.
I don't think so. You know also that the president announced last week that the health care in New York will be cut 50%.
North Carolina, can't we learn from New York?
Okay, what is your name again?
My name is Veronica Benning. I'm a native of Winston-Salem, living right here in the capital city of Raleigh, North Carolina.
All right, thank you, Veronica.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was you wandering around Raleigh at the protest. So I find it, you know, endlessly fascinating, the different people who come out, and I'm glad that they do. I'm impressed that this has grown so much from just a few people to, you know, thousands upon thousands every week now. One of the things that, you know, I like is that this has been, saw some articles in Huffington Post and other places recently that other states are now studying the Moral Monday movement. They say it's a textbook example of peaceful, you know, nonviolent protest. But, you know, the people here in North Carolina were forced into doing this because when the Republicans took over, they started ramrodding this extreme agenda through our Congress, and they refused to even pretend to hear any arguments against it or other sides, you know, points of view, or if it will be impact someone negatively, because they had their preset agenda they want to get through, which is what they've done. I mean, they've attacked voting rights, they've attacked labor law, they've attacked women's rights, health care. They've just undercut all of education. We just lost our funding for that amazingly this week. It's a terrible blow. And that's, you know, a big thing that's close to me, education. I love I come from a family of educators, so, you know, I always talk about that with, you know, Mike. But I don't understand the short-sightedness of any party for any reason, but especially one that preaches, you know, family values and being uber patriots. What is the benefit? How is it possibly a benefit ever to defund schools, defund our children's education, defund our investment in the future, fire teachers, you know, close all the buildings and cut the hours and the amount of days they work. You know, I don't get it. I don't understand that. That's one of my absolute, you know, pet peeves, because it doesn't seem to fit. I mean, I understand the religious overtones of things like abortion and stuff like that, but I don't understand their hatred for general education. And that's when it gets back into that more base, like racism and stuff like that, because they always seem to want to attack public education and attack schools in poor districts.
Yeah, but don't you see? What's that, Sharia law?
Oh,
yeah.
Sharia law.
Sharia law. Yeah. That's what it is. That's what Sharia law does. It keeps people ignorant. Women cannot go to school,
right,
and there's only one direction you must think and learn, and that is our direction. If you don't think and learn like us, you will be hung or stoned, or because this is the only way. And when there's only one way to do anything,
right,
I always think of Captain Kirk when Khan was after him, and he tells they're down on the planet that's being destroyed, and they ask. He goes over he opens up his microphone and says to him, "Are you in position, Mr. Spock?" He said, "Yes, sir. According to section such and such, I am there." And he said, "Well, you lied." When he got back up, they all got back up there. But before he got back up there, his girlfriend said to him, Captain Kirk, "But I thought that we were stuck down here." He says, "I don't believe in a no-win scenario."
Right.
There's always two sides to everything.
Right.
Two sides. If you always get one side, you will never, ever be any good. You will never, never last. But when you keep people controlled with their education, you keep people from realizing what their potentials are.
Same old, every dictator, every whatever else, they're always it's about control. And the most dangerous thing ever is a thought. You can't control thoughts, so you have to try. And you dumb down people, you close their schools, and you teach them the only way. And unfortunately, it's often tied to religion, because they'll say, the only thing you ever need to learn is, right here in this book, but don't actually read the book. I'll just tell you what it says and listen to my book.
Do you know how many people cannot tell you, who are Muslims, what's in the book?
Oh, I know.
Hey, do you know how many people who are so-called, Christians, that can't tell you what's in the Bible?
Oh, of course. Look, these guys are... It's unbelievable the amount of ignorance that pervades. Unfortunately, just like they say, a lot of times the more you learn, it kind of dissolves your faith and you end up not believing in anything because you know too much to believe in anything. Well, the reverse is true. These people, when they don't think and don't know anything, that's why they're absolutely rock solid in their faith because they don't know anything. Debates down in the South when I lived down there.
You don't have these stones on
you? Yeah, I had to leave. The stones hurt when they throw them. But I would have debates with these people, and I got my minor in philosophy. I studied, I got especially in Eastern philosophy, but I studied all the religions.
Eastern philosophy?
I had a minor in anthropology as well. I studied these things. We studied primitive cultures. And to understand all of this, I read every holy text.
Well, the text is only 6,000 years old, so you didn't have a lot to learn.
I read all of this stuff, Taoism, Hinduism, Buddhism. I read the Bible. I read the Quran. I read all the texts.
You need to be put away because you know too much.
When you read them, I would talk with people about them, and when you point out inconsistencies or, when they like to quote something every once in a while, or just but they only quote part of it.
Only the part that they know or the part that they want to get across.
It's usually the part that reinforces what they want to say,
right.
And then they leave out the part that negates what they're saying. So
saying, I only believe in the Old Testament. Forget that New Testament.
But there's
New Testament.
Used to argue with me all the time, and he would tell me constantly, I don't need to read the Bible to know the Bible. And I'm like, what the heck does that mean? I was just like, he goes, it's infallible.
Maybe he's an angel. Was he an angel?
No, it's stupid. But I just can't, you can't argue with it. But these people live in some bizarre world where
you're absolutely
sure. Because you don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Right.
And I don't get it. But the point is, I was just reading this off this thing, this Moral Monday has become a
it's fabulous
phenomenon.
Right, absolutely.
People are everywhere, so they're emulating it now because it's a model of how to do a nonviolent, peaceful protest but get attention and get your voice heard. And the reason why, the head NAACP here, he said that they were forced to go here because, all the extreme cuts,
right. Education,
social programs, Medicaid, all the stuff. And when they took out the Justice Clause of people, Racial Justice Act, overturning that, he said, but we tried. He said, we tried to go through the legislature. We tried to do everything else. He said, we were running out of options to get our voices heard. And that's Reverend Barber said that. But it's true. And I think it's a perfect example of what citizens can do, because no matter how they restrict us. And no matter how many times they block us from showing up and having our voices heard or having an opinion on the law, you can do it another way.
Well, I just want to play something here that Morning Joe said on his show about the Republican Party.
To say, listen, we...
The seeds are being planted right now for the destruction of the House Republican majority. They're being planted.
We haven't even talked about guns.
They are sworn into that. We haven't even talked about Sandy Hook. We haven't talked about.
Think about that.
Being wrapped as the party of Wayne LaPierre instead of the party of Ronald Reagan. The extremism that is going to be wrapped around this party. They start, the men and women being sworn in today, start behind the eight ball. They are already on their way to making Nancy Pelosi the next Speaker of the House.
Neil Malika, I am hoping that Joe Scarborough is right, that there is a colossal price to pay for inaction on what the president calls keeping our children safe in schools.
Now, even Morning Joe, who was an ultra-conservative Republican, but you see, we use the word ultra-conservative Republican. He is not the ultra-conservative Republican that the Tea Party and these other morons are. These people are not Republicans or Democrats. They don't care about the Republican Party. They are a self-appointed, righteous indignation. That's what they're filled with.
Yeah.
And they want to destroy everything so it can be brought back in their own image. And they're talking about Sharia law. They are the Sharias who want this law passed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just outrageous.
That was what was so ironic here in North Carolina is that they took an anti-Sharia law.
Right.
Literally, that they're trying to make a statement.
Right.
We won't ever have this horrible stuff in America. And then they attached all this anti-woman,
right.
Anti-healthcare, anti...
So isn't that Sharia law what they're doing?
Abortion.
I mean, it's just like, oh, we will not have any more flooding from that river. And they built 18,000 homes on the river.
Yep.
What are we talking about? Here's a little bit more from Moral Mondays, which I thought was really great.
Although I've lived in North Carolina for 10 years, I paid taxes in North Carolina for 10 years. My parents have paid taxes since they came to this country, to this state. So it's so hard to comprehend why do I have to pay out-of-state tuition. I don't understand that. But that's not all. Okay, this is so unjust. Let me tell you. I attend Wake Technical Community College. I cannot enroll in classes after a week that they have started. I am starting classes late, okay, because I am undocumented. That is pure injustice. That is so unfair, okay? I know I am undocumented. And, okay, you want me to pay out-of-state tuition. I have a dream that's bigger than all of this, okay? I'm going to become a medical doctor. Let me have an education. I was top 10 of my class. I graduated with a GPA of 4.5. Top honor. Okay. And I plan to continue all that hard work, but it breaks my heart when I have to go on a Saturday a week after class has started and get all the leftovers. It is so hard. Every semester, I'm behind in my classes. I thought I had everything planned out. I was going to graduate after I went to the medical school, my specialty and everything. I was going to be 32 years old. I was very happy. But now, with all this policy that really sucks, I'm going to be 33 years old. And I depend on all of you that can't vote to change that. Because I want to be a medical doctor to serve all of you, serve my community in the U.S. Okay? So that is where I'm from. Last year, after I graduated, I had to make a decision that I was going to go back to Hunter because I wanted to be a medical doctor, and I had planned everything out. I was going to go in September. And then, you know, one night, I got to my knees, and I started praying to God, and I said, please give me a sign. What do I need to do? Am I staying or am I going back? Because school was going to be so expensive, and the policies were really just terrifying. It was breaking my heart. And the very next day, the very next morning, President Obama announced it for action, which now I have. And now I have a driver license, which is great. I love it. I have a social security, but still, the policy has not changed. I still have to go through all of that. And right now, there's something called the Mexican Action, where a dreamer who self-deported himself to Mexico when they graduated from high school and thought that they could not go to school here and they wanted to continue to be educated, be professionals, they went back to their country. One specific person from North Carolina, Luis, who came to the U.S. when he was 5 years old, and he left when he was 19. He had never been to Mexico since he came here, and he decided to go back. Well, he wants to come back home, and that's what he's doing right now as I speak. He's crossing the border, and he's asking to please to let him back in to where he's from, the United States of America. He wants to be reunited with his family who all live here. Forward together.
One shot back.
Forward together.
Not one shot back.
Forward together.
Not one shot back.
Thank you all.
Now, that was about 8,000 to 10,000 people that were out there. This was a young gentleman who's in college now. He's an illegal alien. He doesn't have any papers, but he has worked and paid taxes, city and state taxes, as long as he's been here going to school. He's working towards getting, he wants to work towards getting his American citizenship papers. He wants to be a doctor, and he thought that he had a better chance of becoming a good doctor by going to school here. He came here with his family when he was 9 years old, or 10 years old. So this is the only country he knew. They want to send him back to El Salvador. He doesn't know anything. He don't know. He has relatives there, he understands, but he has nobody that he has gone to school with. He knows nobody there. So the thing is, he's saying, if they want to come out and arrest me, let them arrest me right now. And the thing is that he wants to be a doctor here in America. How can we send people who are paying taxes? And that's the other thing. These people can say they don't pay taxes. The only thing that people don't pay, whether you are on welfare, whether you are getting $8,000 a year, whether you're an illegal alien, you are paying city and state taxes and road taxes for your car if you have one. You're just not paying federal taxes. And why are these people so upset about people not paying federal taxes when they hate the government? All of them don't want to pay federal taxes. Right.
They don't want anybody, especially corporations, paying taxes.
Right.
And
federal taxes.
And, yeah,
federal
and
taxes.
They hate the IRS. They,
yes.
They consider it the
so then why are they saying these people don't pay taxes? Why is that all you, the mantra that you hear?
About, yeah.
That's all they talk about.
Well, well,
they
don't,
no, because they don't pay taxes. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's completely illiterate. Well, now
we'll talk about taxes. Now, this is what cracks me up. Listen to this for a second. Republicans, this is talking out of both sides of their mouth. This is the type of stuff that makes me just rabid. You know, they are the anti-tax party.
Yes.
They're the ones that are trying to protect your hard-earned dollars.
Right.
From that evil, jackbooted government.
Right.
Right. And then they do things like this on this voting bill that they just, this Voting Rights Act that they're mm-hmm. passing through. You know, one of the reasons that it was protested the most was because of what they're trying to do to students. So that they, you know, will kill the student vote because
right.
students tend to vote.
Absolutely.
The
right.
But nonetheless, they had a this law would impose a $2,500 tax penalty on a parent
on the parents.
Student that votes in college.
Well, they, but see.
But look, the Republicans are going to charge $2,500 tax penalty on someone to vote.
Right.
So. Someone who wants to do their baseline American patriotic duty and vote, they're going to put a $2,500.
Well, see, it's illegal because that's against, well, that's against the Civil Rights Act.
Yeah, yes,
a poll tax. Yeah. A poll tax to vote. So that will never go through.
No.
Never. That's a poll tax. If it was created by the state, it, the federal law supersedes that. That's a poll tax.
But the point is, if you listen to
that, right.
they say one thing. What they do in reality is things like that. When McCrory went in, they just changed that the budget.
Right.
The whole country, he raised taxes
right. on everyone.
Right.
Sales tax, gas tax,
right.
the highway tax,
right.
everything went up. All taxes went up. That's Republican. They're talking, saying we're lowering taxes.
Right, they haven't lowered any taxes.
They raised everybody.
They raised their right, and then they're cutting out. They cut the what's it, the what was it that they cut from 535 to 335
unemployment.
Unemployment. They cut that in half in the state.
Well, they cut it in half in time and in
money. Right, right.
So they have half the time off and
right.
You know what they're force those lazy people to go back to work sooner.
Right.
You were laid off. You weren't lazy.
That's right. You were laid off.
You were
now, and then off. The other thing that I just heard was that, I mean, I was listening to, and I did not record it. Maybe I did. No, I didn't record. Yeah, it was the, here's something here. Obama is now looking for the young entertainers like Mary J. Blige, all of them, to come to the White House to come up with an idea of how they can get the other young people on our who are listening to us to vote, and what's stopping them to vote?
Just like in the past, we've had things like Live Aid and other things
right.
to push a social movement.
Right. And
we're going to get the Beliebers,
yeah.
whatever those are called, all to us.
Right now, we have a. We have in the House our general counsel and the general counsel and managing director of the Anderson Project, Mr. Edward Hales, Reverend Hales.
Good afternoon. Good to be with you this afternoon.
Ah, very good to see you. We were just talking about you a minute. I know you are in a rush because you told me about the conference call, but we were just talking about North Carolina. I mean, these people have gone absolutely ballistic. I mean, what else? There isn't any other law that they can pass except you no longer have the right to vote in North Carolina.
Right. Maybe
wow.
I mean, that's the only law they haven't passed.
Let me read this, Reverend Hales, real quick, just for the listeners more than you. You know what we're talking about. But Wednesday, North Carolina Senate, they passed this horrific version Bill 589, and in it, and this is just an example of some of the things, listen for anything that expands or eases or helps voting rights. They ended same-day registration. They repealed pre-registration. They have a bifurcated presidential state primary election days. They chopped off a week of early voting. They narrowed the sites they can have. They've made the most restrictive photo ID law in the entire country, and they have disqualified anyone for having any other kind of ID, including college IDs, is invalid now. So even if you have an ID, it ain't good enough.
That's right.
So again, just on that little bitty, blurb, what, and they said they did this to help the electoral process and help voting in our state. Okay. What in that expanded or helped or eased or in any way made it viable to vote in this state?
That's the question.
You're absolutely right. It seems like they went through extraordinary means to make it harder for eligible citizens to vote and to do it for their own partisan gain.
Right.
If you're old, if you're
yeah, that's the other thing, Judge. If you are injured, handicapped, you will no longer be able to vote with the machine coming out to the car. You have to get into the voting and yourself and make sure you do it yourself. But they're also getting rid of voting straight ticket.
Right.
So now you can't go in there because most Democrats vote straight ticket.
Yeah. And it's easier.
And it's easier. Right.
You don't actually have to. And
except for the president. Right. You got to vote for the president. You got to vote for the judges separately.
And just to lay it on them, though.
Right.
The solution to this is voter education and know who you're voting for. Okay. Too many people don't pay attention, and they go in there and they do expect to be able to push a button and
right.
magically fill in because
right.
they don't have any conception of who the judges are or who the county commissioner is or anything else. And, hey, guess what? You have to pay attention a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
When you're worried about the ruling of your own country, maybe you want to pay attention.
What did you think about Moral Monday? You were up there, and I'd like to get your opinion on it.
Well, I was just – impressed all over again with the leadership of Reverend Barber and the North Carolina State Conference of NAACP branches and all of the members and the supporters who had organized these activities in very strategic ways and very creative ways, and to have the resources of lawyers available to advise people who are willing to make the sacrifice to get arrested to stand up for justice and for freedom and for opportunities for people to participate in their democracy. It was inspiring. It was and you may recall the young Latino boy couldn't have been more than 3 years old who Reverend Barber put basically up on his shoulder and had him speak into the mic as he said, "Forward together, not one step back." And to hear that three-year-old just capture the imagination of people in the crowd. To see the Baptist ministers joining arms with rabbis, and to just see people of all races, to see young people and people who I like to say are chronologically gifted, to see those Latino students talk about their generation and their hopes for being successful in America, and just being saddened by seeing these pressures that are put on them to make it harder for them to succeed in the land that they've always viewed as free. It was just totally a moving experience. For me, I've been involved in civil rights all my life, and you know there have been many opportunities that I've had to participate in well orchestrated demonstrations. But just to feel the flow and feel the energy and feel the spirit and the passion and the love and the justice that was there, you just can't manufacture. You just can't make a script for this. This was very real. It was very moving. And then I was out at the detention center after people were released, and was there at the very last moment when a young man from Texas was coming out of prison. I think he was the 74th person who had been arrested and then released, and he just felt like he had done his share to push justice forward. And then there was a very remarkable moment, and I think this is what your listeners and other people in North Carolina should really be proud about, and that is that people around the country are paying attention to what's happening on Moral Mondays. By the help of technology, I watched Reverend Barber communicate with the Dream Defenders, who have taken over the capital of the state capital in Tallahassee, demanding a new Trayvon Martin law, so young men and women of color will feel protected when they walk down the street. So they talked to Reverend Barber, and he talked with them, and you could just see that there was a lot of inspiration shared between them, that we are part of a movement now that's both big in North Carolina and is moving across the states.
Well, you know, it is so important what you just said. And it was the first time I had been to Moral Monday because I had been sick, as everybody knows. And I was shocked to understand that there was only about 50 to 100 people that started this whole thing. And
that's
now
right.
It's like 8 to 10,000. And, yeah. And the other thing, that it's across the spectrum. Every race, creed, color, hue that you can imagine was there. People coming from Washington, people coming from Texas, people coming from Philadelphia. I mean, it's because these are the places where, and we were just talking about Section 3, which I'd like to give a short, like you have given me a short definition. We were talking about that before, because this is the other arrow that the Attorney General has in his pouch to shoot. And you may have hurt Section 5, the formula section only. See, people think that's all done. Section 5 is gone. Section 5 is not gone. He only got rid of the formula, and he didn't get rid of the formula. He told the House and the Senate to come up with a new formula.
So
you know, they didn't kill the law. So there's a lot of things in this that is being portrayed, and it's not true. And what we need to do is to communicate this to people so they don't feel down that they have lost. And this is all – I was talking to my doctor the other yesterday when I was there, and I said, you know they have lost. They know it.
Yeah.
And it's like the snake with that has his head cut off. But the body is flashing around.
Still moving.
It's still flashing around, but they're dead and they don't know it.
Well, one thing that I love that Moral Monday and other things are doing, and what he talks about, is the and you can see the stark difference between what we're doing here and what they're doing inside the legislature, which is it seems like topsy-turvy world. But we're the ones out in the street educating and promoting voting and promoting awareness for citizens.
Right.
Right. They're the ones inside the building limiting debate,
right,
chopping it off, restricting access to voting. And then this, I don't know if you were on earlier, Reverend, but I saw this thing from Tom Goolsbee, the state senator. That came out a week or so ago that said he just called all of the Moral Monday. He said he didn't have to pay attention to any of y'all because he said it was Moron Mondays, and that it was full of nothing but loser hippies and clowns, and that it was a circus act. And now see, this is a senator talking about his own
North Carolina state senator.
Yeah, see, right. He doesn't know. Well, those are famous last words, as I'd like to call them. But
And the thing is that they thought that this would hurt. Their whole idea was is just to decrease much and put in the box much of the Democratic vote that they could. And they don't care if there's white Democrats involved in it. They don't care. But all they want to put Democrats. They want to make it so depressed for us. That's what they need, because they know in this particular vote in 14, it's not a presidential vote. So it's going to be a low voter turnout anyway. They feel if they can depress the black Democratic vote and the white Democratic vote and the Hispanic Democratic vote enough, they will win. Even though their votes will be depressed, they'll win by enough to keep this going until 2016. But they may be wrong.
Yeah, there's no question about it. That's why Moral Monday is so important, because the spirit of the people is very clear that we're fighting back, we're moving forward, we're not going backwards. You don't realize that you've fired the people up more than you've broken their spirit.
What's
happening.
That's famous last words of the Admiral Tokyo, Admiral he said, I think we have awakened a sleeping giant when they bombed Pearl Harbor. So the thing is that, but I want to get you before you go, what is Section 3 of the Voting Rights Act? Can you explain that?
Well, let me put it this way. It's a way to bail in jurisdictions that are not currently covered under Section 5. In other words, if there is some established violation of a voting rights based on intentional discrimination, then as a remedy, those jurisdictions can be bailed into coverage so that they will have to, for a 10-year period, go through the process of having their voting changes reviewed again. So your guest made it abundantly clear, and I'm glad he did and you have, that the Voting Rights Act has not been struck down. Section 4 was struck down. Section 5 is still in place, but, of course, it's going to require Congress to enact a new Section 4 formula, and you know, that's going to take some time. But what I like about the bold move that Attorney General Eric Holder made yesterday in going after the state of Texas, which has an egregious history of intentionally discriminating against African-American and Latino voters. And, in fact, you may recall that when the Shelby County decision was announced by the Supreme Court, within 2 hours, the Attorney General of the state announced that they were going to enforce their very restrictive voter suppression, voter ID requirement. But there still were court proceedings to take place before that could happen. But he was so excited about making it harder for people to vote that he announced, we're going forward with it now. But the Attorney General said, hold up. Now he's using this redistricting case where intentional discrimination was found to say we could use that case as a hook to bail in Texas, so they have to go through this. And this is what it reminds me of, Brother Lawson, and maybe this comes out of a one of those old Batman movies or something. But people have compared the striking down of Section 4 but leaving Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act in place as sort of like somebody telling you, well, here, you can keep this brand-new car, but I'm going to hold on to the keys. And
right, right.
So that's what it is. Section 5 wasn't struck down, but if you have a car and no keys, you can't go anywhere. But from the Batman movie, what Eric Holder did said, well, as long as there's an inside latch in the car, I can pop open the trunk and take my motorcycle out of the trunk and enforce the law through Section 2 and Section 3. And so that's what he did. It takes a little longer. It doesn't have the same power maybe as the as Section 5, but it still can use the Voting Rights Act as a tool to protect voters.
And if we can use this tool long enough to get back to a place where we can get rid of some of these people. And, you know, this is the thing. People talk about where you have the districts to redistrict it so bad that we'll never be able to get it back in time to get back in charge. Well, see, that's not the problem. You see, they're causing so much problems thinking that it's going to hurt the Democrats and minorities, especially. They haven't even thought about how it's hurting their own people. And they're the people that's going to do them in. It ain't going to be us.
Yeah.
It's going to be their people that have cut the unemployment in half here in North Carolina, that they're going to now make those same people go 25 miles to vote and then come back to register, then come back to vote again at another time. It's those people that are going to hurt.
Those working class people are going to be out of work or poor or working three jobs to try to pay bills, but they aren't going to be able to vote.
Absolutely.
But again, hey, this is one thing, though, that we've said before. This is the only thing that you can count on.
Right.
No matter how much power they seize,
no matter
how
lucky they overreach
and they always screw it
up. Right.
I'd
like to ask you about Trayvon Martin and this Trayvon Martin case. When we first came on, I was playing some of the the interviews that B-29 made. And I don't blame her, but, you know, and I gave the example that in 12 Angry Men, I mean, it was 11 to convict and only one to not convict. And he convinced all of them to go and make a acquittal. So when you have six people and you have one person for murder two and you have two for manslaughter and you have three to let the person go, it's easier to change that in any direction. But the problem here, I blame the prosecutors, I blame the judge, and I blame, well, especially the prosecutors, because how they could let a wife of a prominent lawyer as one of the jurors on a case like this is inexcusable. And the second thing, I blame the judge for not charging the jury correctly when the jury asked for an explanation of manslaughter. She sent back, what part of you want me to explain? Now, if they knew what part of manslaughter they wanted her to explain, she never would have asked her to explain manslaughter. It makes sense. So she did not help them, and I don't know if that was willingly or she's probably a very good judge, or if it was just unwittingly. And what happened, this woman, B-29, says, well, you know, we can't prove that he shot Trayvon Martin on purpose. But in manslaughter, you don't need intent to prove that it was done. If you're driving a car and you hit somebody who is drunk, it's manslaughter. It's manslaughter. Yeah. You not intent to do it, but this is the same thing. So the intent did not have to be there. And when the prosecutors had the gun in the back, Trayvon Martin had his gun in the small of his back, it is impossible for Trayvon Martin to have seen that gun. And it was impossible for him to shoot Trayvon Martin from that position, because Trayvon Martin would have ran if he saw that gun come out. So the thing is that there was so much stuff that was done wrong, and I don't know if it was done wrong on purpose. But now it just looks so bad. I mean, that was a very sloppy trial.
Yeah.
Here's
the good thing. I'm hoping that trial, with its horrific verdict, that was it's the stupidest verdict ever, because the question was manslaughter or murder too. It wasn't, you know, did he do it? But anyway, I hope that this will finally drive the debate back into sanity, and we will get either revision, rethinking, or repeal on the Wild West, you know, shoot at will laws that we have now, or a Trayvon Martin specific law that will help people in the future.
Right.
I mean, that's the outcome, hopefully. Because you can't do anything now to Zimmerman. Zimmerman, he's free.
Right.
You know, you can try him in civil court or whatever. Right. But
the civil rights violation still is still blooming. Well, what's your thought on that, Reverend Hales?
Well, I mean, this is such a horrific tragedy that I know in our office every day it is like a pall over the office, because people keep thinking about it, and it's just a hard thing to accept. This young man died because George Zimmerman got out of his car or his truck. He didn't have to get out of his truck, but he got out of his truck because he saw a young African-American man with a hoodie on and decided that was suspicious. Nothing about his behavior. Nothing about walking Skittles in an ice can is suspicious. So if he had stayed in his car, Trayvon Martin would be alive today.
Well, he got out of his truck because he had a gun. He would never have gotten out of his truck if he didn't have a gun.
That's right. That's right. So let's start there. But now the Department of Justice has opened up a investigation, our hope is that with their extensive resources and trained investigators, that they will begin to pull together evidence that may have been overlooked. And while there's a super climb to find a civil rights violation under federal law, there is the possibility that their resources will uncover things that will show what actually happened. That's sort of our hope. We don't want the family to go through a lot of pain. It's so painful to think that this young man was shot in the heart by someone who was trained and who claimed that he was in fear of his life when he had a gun and the young man had Skittles and iced tea. I know there's been a lot of Twitter traffic over the jurors' comments about Zimmerman getting away with murder, and they want to know, well, why didn't you just hold out? And you're absolutely right that unless you've been under the pressure and the scrutiny of being in a jury deliberation room with other jurors who don't agree with you, then it's hard to know what that pressure is like. So I don't want to condemn her, but I think that she spoke with courage and conviction in telling us what she actually thinks now.
It was wrong for that jury to be made up with the makeup that was, and I blame the prosecutors for that whole situation. They can pick the jurors. I mean, they go to voir dire, and that's when they pick them. I mean, so this is it's completely illogical, and this is the results that you get from this. It's not say, well, I knew that was going to be he was going to get off. Yeah, well, people say I know. Well, you know because why? What do you know? You just think it gut wise, you know. But the facts were not were there for him not to get off, but they weren't used correctly. And I can't blame B-29. It wasn't explained to her what manslaughter was, that you didn't need intent. And maybe if she heard that manslaughter was no intent was needed, this would have been a different story. And maybe those other two people who wanted manslaughter from the beginning would have been strong enough to overturn the other three people. So, It's for people who have never seen 12 Angry Men, and I'm not talking about that joke version that was the copy, the color version. You need to see the black and white version. That is how a jury room is conducted, maybe, on a murder case when you have diverse people from all over. And that's with 12 people. So you can imagine what it is with just 6 people. I mean, you know, but he had to go 100% the other way. He was the one who was against 11 people. But I always show when I teach the class, I say if you had looked at the old man who was sitting next to him, he wanted to put up his hand but not guilty, but he never turned around to look at Henry Fonda who put up his hand. And because he was old, he didn't want to be ridiculed. So he did not put up his hand. And that is the tip. We don't know what went on in this jury. The same thing. She did not want to be the only one to hold out. And when she felt that there was no correction of what manslaughter was, so she voted that way. So, but
I think the remedy for all of that is better education.
Yes, well.
If you want to see this happen over and over again, do nothing, sit around and be more right. But if you want it to stop, then educate yourself and go out and vote and change the laws and make them better.
Okay, before you go, I know you got to go. What is the Advancement Project doing now? I know they do it a lot. What are they doing now? Are they in Texas, Pennsylvania, and are they filing suits in any of those places?
Yeah, we're actually in trial in Pennsylvania now, putting on witnesses and evidence to protect voting rights in Pennsylvania, and we're looking at options in Texas and in North Carolina and so there's I call it 1,000 points of fight all over the country, and we just have to stay on top of it to the extent our resources allow. And again, in North Carolina, you had the blessing of the visionary leadership of Reverend Barber and a strong coalition that's diverse, organized, creative, and strategic. So we're always always willing to help out where we can.
Okay. How much longer do you have? I know you're supposed to be going someplace.
Well, I'm actually, I'm right at the 5 o'clock hour when I'm scheduled for a meeting, and I appreciate having this time to be on. I wish I could have come on earlier, but it's been sort of that kind of day with all of the things on our plate.
Well, I just want to thank our general counsel for being on, and it was great to finally meet you.
Same here. Same here. That was exciting.
I don't know when the next time you're going to be down this way or up this way.
But I'll let you know.
You let me know, we'll have dinner.
Oh, I'd love that.
All right,
you take care, Brother Lawson. All right. Bye for now.
All right. Bye-bye. And that was our general counsel, Reverend Edward Hales from the Advancement Project. He's the general, he's the managing director and general counsel for the Advancement Project. And it was good to meet him on Monday.
Yeah.
And we didn't know what each other looked, so I was trying to describe what I was wearing. And then I had to disappear to get somebody else I had to meet who was coming up there, then I had to come back, and then they had it blocked off. So what they did was, when Reverend Barber finished speaking and the other speakers spoke, they said everybody who's going to go into the assembly hall, into the assembly, had to come behind the stage. So they were moving people by, you know, whole thousands of people going behind the stage, and then it was empty on my side, so I was able to get behind the stage, and I saw him, but I didn't know if it was him. I saw his picture from the internet, and I thought it was him. He had on sunglasses, and he was talking to somebody else, and it sounded like him. I knew his voice, so I said,
right.
Reverend Hales. He said, you know, I was looking for you. I said, well, I had gone. He said, I know you told me a burgundy shirt, but there's like five people out here with burgundy shirts on. So I said, yeah, but mine was the one that was sweating. Because what happened was, it was, they had 98 degrees out there, and I was wearing, I first was going to go out there in a thin T-shirt and my shorts and sneakers, and then I asked Randy Vola, who's the chair of the party, what was he wearing? He said, well, I got to wear a suit tie because I got to go to a meeting. I said, oh, look, let me go back. I changed, went out there. I said, I must be crazy. And then because of my illness, I couldn't walk with sciatica nerves. So I said, we got to drive close by here. And I can't believe it. We got a parking space. It couldn't be no more than 100 feet from the where we walked up to the place. And we got out because I drove him over there and Randy Vola. And then we, I went on interviewing. I think there was one other thing that I wanted to play here from someone from the speeches, and I mean, I got so much garbage these plays, these are, I played that, and then I think it was Democratic leader Larry Hall. I'd like to have him tell us. He was at Moral Mondays with me, and I called him. He was one of the people that was going in. Of course, he wasn't going to get arrested, but this is what he had to say.
So that's a little bit too small for me. I got to be closer to the people, see.
I love that.
I got a smaller district so I can talk to people. Yes, sir. How are you?
Say, Congressman Larry Hall, the leader
Democratic leader.
North Carolina.
That's
well, there's only one party. It's the Democratic Party. So
that's
I didn't
right.
have to say that.
That's right.
So, last time we talked about, I think I mentioned about all them arrows being shot at you because you were the leader.
Yeah.
Are they still trying to knock you off?
Well, and they should try that, but we have no fear as long as we have the people showing up. And we know the people are behind us, so we're ready to go forward.
So what do you think about today's event?
Great event as usual. North Carolinians coming to claim their right to determine what their government does, and that's what they're supposed to do, and we need to take a cue from them.
Right. What about this midnight or close to midnight bills that are added to bills that you're supposed to be signing. What's going on here?
Well, I hope people will stay vigilant because you're going to see that over the next 3 or 4 days. Quick sessions, bills coming to the floor unannounced and being voted to be on the calendar over objection. So you're going to see that over the next few days. And then keep in mind, this is your government being stolen from you.
So you have a sign that says here, respect our vote, stop voter photo ID.
And it means what it says. It's a big sign. It's a big principle. And we need to make sure we keep everybody's right to vote available and accessible to them. We don't have any problem with voting in North Carolina, and if we did, if there is any problem, then all the Republicans need to resign right away because they got elected under those same laws.
Yeah, I was about to ask you that. How did they get elected? It was all this voting fraud.
Well, it's amazing how all the people that voted for them supposedly voted legally, and if anyone voted illegally, it must have been for Democrats.
Oh, that's right. We will see, but I'm sure you'll be standing up there with the arrows in the back wearing a thick flak jacket.
Yeah, thick flak jacket every morning, and I'm ready to take the arrows for the people of North Carolina. We're going to win this thing, as Reverend Barber said.
Yes.
So have no fear. Just keep doing what you're doing, North Carolina.
And tell us where you are from.
I'm from Durham, North Carolina. That's right. We call it the Bull City, but certainly it's the place to be. Stop through and see us. We believe in freedom. We believe in the right to vote.
Thank you. Democratic leader, Larry Hall.
Well, that was Democratic leader. Yep. Ex-Marine, tall, about 6'3" or 6'4", and means business.
Yeah. Well, look, here's one thing that two things he pointed out that really interest me. One is the fact that they stealing democracy right in front of your eyes. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that is a hallmark of democracy is transparency. And, you know, your old Joe and Kaki, you tell when they're lying, their lips are moving, you know. But legislatively, the way I can tell that a party, and it can be any party, but just in general, a party is stealing something is because they're not debating it in open. They're not They're not going through the proper motions, doing something slowly, deliberatively, and you know, getting a good law.
Mm-hmm.
They ram it through at midnight, or they attach it to something that's the 15th Amendment. You know.
Oh, now, as a matter of fact,
you know, anti-abortion laws attached to a Sharia law, you know, that type of stuff.
What was the thing that was just passed that the Congress did that they passed, they put it on a bill for oil or something?
Mm-hmm.
But it was, do I have that here? I don't know if they, yeah, so go on what you were saying.
But that's the point. You can tell that they're doing something underhanded by the way they act
mm-hmm.
and the way they're putting it forward legislatively. If it weren't, you know, they wouldn't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
They could do it, you know, right in the light of day and have everybody in the house together and kumbaya, you know, but instead it's always these, you know, let's pass it on, you know, Saturday evening and attach it to the chip and soda bill or something. You know,
right.
That they come up with. It's just, it's ridiculous, okay?
No, it was about abortion.
Yeah.
It was abortion act that they pursued.
They did it here. They put the abortion bills. They did all the stuff always attached to something and rammed through at night. And then the other thing I want people to pay attention to here in North Carolina that's happened is these Republicans, you know, they have a supermajority. Right? Well, one of the first things they did, though, was a little quirky thing. Again, you know, you talk about your open government, your functioning government, the way it really should work.
Mm-hmm.
You have votes. The votes are recorded. Everything is formal. You can tally it up. You can count it 15 ways. You can put it in the record. Everything's good. Well, what they did was they revoked that. Do you realize that they revoked that this spring?
Mm-hmm.
They now have it. Voice vote. So instead of doing an actual recorded vote where you push the button,
yeah,
your seat,
and it can be recorded for a lifetime.
Yeah. What they do now is they just go, is it yay or nay? And you hear a shout, yay, okay, the yays have it. So they do this thing where, you know, if you're loud enough, it obviously passes, but no one gets recorded as an actual vote. So isn't that a nice trick? I mean, again, if you're a legitimate political party in power, then act in a legitimate manner.
Well, yeah.
You could have a vote, and if you want to push the button and you voted that way and it's recorded in the register, and I'll sign.
Yeah.
But why does all this underhanded, sneaky, you know, crap that they come up
with? That's so they can claim, you know, I wasn't with that gang. You remember in Tombstone, the movie Tombstone. So Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday and his brothers are chasing who was the head of the gang? The other gang, the guy, what was his name? Cavendish? No, it wasn't Cavendish. But anyway, he was chasing the leader, and they wore the red sashes. They wore the red scarves, all of them in the gang. So he was chasing the last one, and he was riding his horse fast, and he took it off around his neck and threw it down. He said, I'm not part of them. You know, the thing is that they saw him with him. He didn't have to vote and mysteriously not just do a voice vote now. This man, we saw them. We see what they're doing because there's cameras there. But these people just don't care. They want to destroy. And given some of that is that voting statistics in North Carolina show that Democrats are more likely to vote early and vote straight ticket. Two of the practices targeted by this bill of theirs. A state study estimated that more than 300,000 registered voters lack driver's licenses or other forms of state-issued ID. Most of them early or low income.
Yeah. So you're talking about, you know, again, there's a little bit chipping away at it. There's 300,000 people.
Poof, poof. So that's really well. We have to worry about them.
Yeah.
But we lost by more than 300,000 before, so we need to get more.
Right. But that's why they attack, you know, elderly.
Because, you know, some of those 300,000 might be able to get a ID. So then the next thing is a Democratic amendment to add student ID cards from universities and community colleges was rebuffed. Democrats were successful in adding an amendment to require county boards of elections to either add early voting locations or stay open late on the 10 remaining early days. So
we'll see if that's
well, no, because that's in the amendment. It's passed already.
Okay.
They can't change it now. He said, during lengthy floor debates in both the state and the Senate House, Democrats repeatedly passed Republicans, repeatedly repressed Republicans on why it makes sense to roll back a decade of measures intended to increase voter registration and boost turnout. It's not a decade in North Carolina. It's 125 years. It's 125 years. North Carolina has been one of the most progressive states in this entire country. It said the GOP lawmakers repeatedly denied that the new measures are tied to partisan gain, despite records showing only a handful of documented cases of in-person voter fraud prosecuted in the state over the last decade. Out of 30 million ballots cast, Republicans compared the state elections to the notoriously tainted races in the 1960s Chicago. Now, these people won. How can they claim voter fraud? We should be claiming voter fraud. The Democrats.
Right.
The Democrats said that the voting changes would lead to long lines and chaos at the polls, as happened after early voting days were cut in Florida. And the problem is, are these poll workers going to get paid any longer? Republicans took control of the North Carolina House in 2010 for the first time since Reconstruction and cemented full control over the state governments with inauguration of the, the Penguin McCrory. But registered Democrats still heavily outnumber Republican voters in the state, and the margins of victory in recent elections have sometimes been razor thin. Well, my young lady I know who ran for lieutenant governor, I think the guy beat her by 131 votes. So, and that's after the redistricting.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, what the hell?
Right.
So if you all, as it was said, Senator Josh Stein, Democratic Wake County, suggested Republicans are concerned about facing voters after passing a budget, he said, hurts public education and enacts tax cuts that favor the rich. We went from third in the entire United States to 47th in education in a span of 6 months.
6 months. Now, listen, and this is one of the things that, again, getting back to, you know, hey, let's take them at their word. They're the family values, patriotic.
Oh.
You know, if they were,
mm-hmm.
one of the primary drivers for people and hence, you know, businesses,
mm-hmm.
those businesses mm-hmm. like to go.
Business is business.
Right. But people go to where there is progress.
Mm-hmm.
They go to where there is opportunity and
mm-hmm.
chance. And you know where they like to live? They like to live in clean, well-funded, arts-centric places that have good school systems.
Yes.
And that's one of the major drivers of all of this. Usually number one on the list for families moving anywhere is
right.
the school systems. Now, you have just flushed North Carolina down the sewer. And
absolutely,
you're gonna now see businesses and people.
You know, if Mississippi is ahead of us, the people still ain't going to Mississippi.
Hell yeah, that's what I'm saying. You're going to see. We used to be one of the most moved to places in the South. Now that's going to stop. I mean, I don't know. You're talking about creating jobs and doing different things like that. Well, nobody wants to move to your area because it's like outer Kabul.
Right.
What the heck?
Absolutely. Well, you just can't say, oh, that the tax base is almost zero, but you can't vote.
Yeah.
You can't.
And you can't send your kids to school.
You can't send your kids to school because there's all right.
You know,
the libraries are closed, and when you're in your bedroom, our camera is watching you.
Yeah.
Because if you are two men or two girls, we will get you.
Well,
we will find you.
Even if you're a heterosexual, wonderful woman, we're just going to manually sonic probe you
and
just in case there's some reason that you got pregnant. You know?
And you know,
so this is an
this is almost like my classic that I quote from Detour. Fate or some mysterious force can put the finger on you or me for no good reason at all.
Well, you know what's going to – fate's going to put the finger on McCrory if you don't watch this is my joke that I came up with the other day, though. But I was watching this ongoing I'll be nice, call it debacle.
Debacle.
But this ongoing experiment in democracy that's happening in Egypt. All right, where they got, millions pouring into the streets. I mean, they had the largest gathering of humans.
Since the Pope. None of the Pope beat them.
But, well,
they were on the beach.
But listen.
1.5 million.
Well, they had 33 million.
33 million?
They had
across the country.
From
right.
Space. But they were, anyway, you got all these people out there. Everybody's, going, well, now, the news today, they judge is putting Morsi in prison.
Yeah, well, no. They didn't actually say prison. They didn't actually say prison.
He's been put in an undisclosed location. We'll put it that way. But here's my joke. If McCrory doesn't start paying attention to the people of the state,
it's too late for him.
The tens of thousands that are standing outside.
It's too late. He owes Pope.
Well, yeah. I know he's owned by
Pope. Well, yeah, well, I'd say Pope owns him. That's right. So he can't do nothing. Yeah, he's a tool, right.
The problem is, look at the TV. Look if I have some people like this. Okay, McCrory doesn't work it out. He's going to become McCrorcy.
Yes.
I wonder if he lays watching TV.
We already got 10,000 people now.
Sweaty.
There's 10,000 people that today are going on the mall of the assembly. And that's growing every week.
Yeah.
Started with 50 or 60 people. Now it's up to 8 or 10,000.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Listen.
Hey, Governor, I don't want to alarm you, but guess what?
Yes.
This is about a halfway mark of year one.
I mean, gee whiz.
Welcome,
it's only 1-7.
Now,
and they got.
Wait to these punitive laws go in.
Forget it.
3 years are going to be an interesting time.
We have right now a call in from a guest. And who is this?
This is Randy Vola, chair of the North Carolina Democratic Party.
Well, Chairman Vola, I am so glad to see you. The Reverend Hales said he wished he could have met you up at Morrow Monday, but next time he comes down, we're going to get together and have dinner.
I wish we could have met as well. I'm sorry that I'm a little late on this call. We put out a message in our response to this extreme makeover I think the GOP is giving the state, and I had to go on NBC and ABC, and they wanted to interview me about the message, so I apologize.
Well, could you give us the message for the people who didn't hear that yet?
Yeah, I'm more than happy to. I mean, in essence, I think that their agenda is a pandemic flu that's been unleashed upon the body politic.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's going to make our state not, you know, sick for years to come.
Well, the extreme, I mean the grossly extreme measures where they're going to try to, well, let's talk about the one. We're going to take all the students who are going to school here and live someplace else. They'll have to go back home to vote. And they know that a lot of the poorer students can't do that. So they're going to prevent them to vote here, and they're going to take away their tax base. Now, I believe there's no way that can be done because that's a federal law, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, those type of policies that they're trying to roll into this voter ID bill, I mean, when they first came out with it months ago, I called it the seven deadly attacks on voting, and we did a press conference with Alma Adams and Lewis Duke, who's her president of College
right.
Dems. But then they reconstituted this thing like a Frankenstein monster, and,
mm-hmm.
and they're trying to breathe life into it. And certainly I don't see how diluting or lessening the franchise strengthens your state. It's a constitutional right to vote, you know, and they're treating it. The funny thing about their philosophy is they're more rabid in protecting the Second Amendment than they are in protecting someone's right to vote. They want
yes.
all the access can have the bullets and no access to ballots.
Right. That's absolutely correct. And the thing that, we were just talking with Reverend Hales from the Advancement Project. He just got off, and I had mentioned to him, I said, look, they know. They're like, when I was talking to my doctor, I said, the Republicans in across the country know that they have already lost this whole everything. They've lost everything already. They have had their head chopped off, and now what we know when you chop their head off, their body still moves, and that's what's happening now with them. It's only the body moving, and it's thrashing around, and it doesn't care what it hits, and it's going to be like that for a little while, but they have already lost. They want to eliminate the Democratic vote by eliminating the people who are in college, young people, the elderly people. They want to eliminate the white vote, Democratic vote. And the problem is they are not hurting just them. They're hurting the white vote that voted for them. And it's going to, you know, the white vote that voted for them is, yay, this is great. But wait till it affects them. These laws don't say, oh, it's only the white Republicans that are not going to be affected by this. It affects everybody.
Yeah. I mean,
and you can see that at Moral Mondays where all those people, because I spoke to many people that were Republicans that were there.
It does affect everybody.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, everywhere you vote now is going to be more restricted, less times, less access. It's going to be longer lines. It's going to take a longer time
mm-hmm.
because you're going to have to go through this laborious
right.
ID, verifying the ID,
right.
verifying the ID. You know, do you have DNA you can get? You know, and it's going to slow everything down. So everybody's going to be affected. Everywhere. You think it's going to, you know, help your base turn out?
Right.
You know, your base is going to turn away.
That's right.
Because they're going to be waiting in line for 7 hours.
How are they? Have they explained how
this voter ID is going to be accepted? Are the voting boards going to supply the IDs for the people? Do they have to apply to the state Republican Party for voter ID? How are these voter IDs? How can the people get these voter IDs?
I mean, I don't know what the final bill is going to be here that the governor is going to sign, but and I don't think they've really thought through all the mechanics of this. But I mean, what I'd like to reference it when I read the first review of this monstrosity, they had an element in there that corporations could start funding the normal operating expenses of political parties.
Right. Right.
Which I basically, you know, which the state has not allowed before. In fact, we had some of the most progressive and well thought out voting laws, election law in the country. Okay. I term that the Art Pope provision, so that Art Pope and his Family Dollar stores could basically fund the Republican Party. They get rid of the tax checkoff funds because they're not going to need them if they have friendly corporations underwriting them. And
okay.
Essentially, the democracy becomes your party brought to you by PepsiCo or your party brought to you by Chevron. That's not where we need to be going.
Well, and
that's
and
what
we know.
That's what they've done.
Well,
we're
yeah, and
to, we're trying to.
Well, you know that the governor is really sponsored by Duke Energy. I mean, he's got a retirement from the retirement pension from him. I mean, this is just ludicrous. I mean, so Art Pope is running North Carolina. It's not McCrory. It's like George Bush and Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney ran the government.
Yeah.
Art Pope is running the state government here in North Carolina.
Yeah. All he needs to do is McCrory needs to start taking his Oklahoma vacation.
Right. What is the Democratic Party doing to get its vote out and get to try to help people not to feel down about all the stuff that's being thrown up against the wall to see what sticks?
Well, we're going to be actively involved in municipal elections, and we're going to be supporting programs. You know, for instance, absentee ballots we've not really been strong at before, which of course the Republicans have always. Strong. We're going to run a very aggressive absentee ballot program. We are going to, you know, when we know exactly what the final rules are for voter ID, we will be aggressively involved there. Our senior Democrats are going to be working with absentee ballots and whatever this voter ID. You know, I don't agree with what they've done. We don't agree with what they've done. But if these are the rules that we're going to have to play by, we're going to play by these rules. And we're going to say we object to these rules. But we're going to play by them and try to master them to beat these guys. We're going to have to put out enough of our vote to push them back and restore North Carolina to what it is and what it should be and not let it be made into this extreme right-wing makeover, which is not what anybody voted for, frankly. I don't know a lot of voters that you could actually ask that said, I voted for, you know, Pat Pope or Art McCrory to come to office, did they? Did he tell people that he was going to be a two-headed governor? Did he tell people that he was going to be an extreme right-winger? All I ever heard was he was a moderate.
Yeah, well, you know why he was a moderate? Because when he was here in Charlotte, it was a Democratic city council, a Democratic school board, and a Democratic county commission.
Yep.
And since this is one of the worst states for a mayor, because the mayor, all he has to do is show up. He doesn't do anything. It's just like Perry in daggone Texas. He don't do nothing. The only thing he has to say over is the death penalty. That's all. And he's done that 501 times. But, you know,
I mean,
I
would say that the governor is not really leading. He's leaving them behind. I mean, if he was really leading and wanting to make this a great state, he would come out and say, okay, look, I'm a Republican. This is what I believe in, and he would be an Eisenhower Republican, for instance, or a Rockefeller Republican, and he would say, you know what, some of these extreme ideas are not going to be good for the state, and I'm going to veto them. and he would have offered a budget that would have reflected that. But so far, I've not seen in his governing style a willingness to lead from the front.
Right.
Well, he can't because he's owned and operated by Art Pope. He got elected through with Art Pope. So he's going to have to do this till the last dog dies. He's going to have to fight. He cannot change that. And that's the situation. So we are going to have to change it in 2016.
Even when he's made direct public statements.
Right.
Yes. So you know what he is?
What?
He's Art Pope's Pez dispenser of extreme ideology.
Absolutely.
He's the best Pez dispenser Art Pope has ever sold.
The best.
Comes right out of his mouth.
Oh, I got to put that down on my mix that I sent out.
Mr. Bonola, you may have just come up with a great moneymaker.
That's right.
I'm
writing it down right now.
Write it down. Go ahead and run with that, Michael, because that's how I view him. I mean, and you know Pez dispensers only give out little simple sugary things. I mean, that's all they can do. And that's all he's doing.
Oops.
You know, this is one of the things when I was interviewed today that I think is ridiculous. The Republicans and Percori keep talking about they're creating jobs, they're working on creating jobs, and they don't like it when people say, well, where are the jobs that you promised us? And then he says, give us a chance. And I said, wait a minute. They ran in 2010 on creating jobs. They got in on a wave election. They've been in office since 2011 in January. This is the third budget for Tillis and Berger. Why can't they be held responsible? This is 30 months.
That's right. Absolutely right.
And I said, maybe 30 months in their world is no time at all, but 30 months in my world is a long time to evaluate that their programs don't work. And I don't need 30 months. So Trickle Down hasn't worked in 33 years.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the July 25th Charlotte and a big, almost a quarter page size picture of Tom Tillis and who's this other guy, Tim Moore. And at the top it says, GOP all smiles at 2013 session. At the final debate, the state budget Wednesday in North Carolina General Assembly. I mean, these people,
they're
just unbelievable. They're proud of what they didn't do.
Well, what they did do, though, is
all
their extreme agenda.
Absolutely correct.
And again, you know, you got time to close every abortion clinic in the state. You got time to get your job.
Right. I mean, it's just unbelievable. What do you see? I know we met for a little while on Monday, and
I'm on the phone.
What can you tell us here that we need to do to make sure that Kay Hagan stays our senator?
That Kay Hagan does what?
To make sure that Kay Hagan stays our senator. What can we do here in North Carolina?
And
Mecklenburg, too.
It's a combination of what Kay and the Democratic Party are going to have to do and what we can do. I mean, Kay needs to continue to get out to the base. I continue to take positions that are appealing, you know, across the spectrum like she's doing. And we need to basically remind our base in all of our counties and work on strengthening our county party operations, you know, and you're down in Mecklenburg, starting in Mecklenburg, and say, look, this Senate race is one of the two or three in the country that could actually determine control of the U.S. Senate. The U.S. Senate essentially has been able to hold back the extremists in the House that have gerrymandered their way into office in the Congress. And you're going to end up with appointments to the Supreme Court and other appointments in the Obama administration getting approved by the Senate or rejected. So this vote for Kay Hagan and this drive to get Kay Hagan is going to have far-reaching consequences. This is not a time to stay home. In fact, it's never a time. And Michael, after four terms, I decided not to run for re-election as the mayor of Pittsboro and focus on the importance of winning her race and the others on down the ballot in 2014 as the party chair. And I was asked by our local reporter what I would tell our citizens, and I said, look, apathy is not a virtue. Get involved and make a difference in your community.
Absolutely correct. I mean, because, you know, everything starts on the community level. And if we have a community that doesn't care about who the mayor is, who the city council person is, who the county commissioner is, who's sitting on the school boards, this is where they love it. They take over from there. And when you don't control that, you don't control nothing. So people need to understand, what is one of the things that you'd like to give to the people who are listening right now? Because I know you got to go because you're very busy. What is one of the things that you want like to leave us with here?
As far as getting out the vote?
Yes.
Or as far
well, that
number one, go on. Let me get your whole question. Is this a GOTV question or more encompassing?
Well, it's more encompassing. What I think I'd like you to give to the people who are listening, what is the information that they need to know, and where can they get it for Democrats that are listening and for Republicans that are listening that don't like what's going on? How can they help? What information do you want to get to them to tell them what they can do?
I mean, if they have access to anything online, they can get on our website, they can get on social media in their local county and look up the Mecklenburg Party, for instance, or Gaston County, and they have mm-hmm. Facebook sites, and they have, you know, we have websites to get information. But I would advise them, and I'd say, look, go to your local party, you know, contact me as a chair, copy me on the email. You know, you can send it to ncdemchair@gmail.com and say, I want to get involved. You know, mm-hmm. start writing letters to the editor, start being willing to make phone calls, be willing to knock on doors. The simplest thing that anyone can do is to ensure that everybody within their social circle understands what's going on, is paying attention to what's going on, and you make sure they vote. That means that your in-laws, the outlaws, your brothers, your sisters, your cousins, your kin, that they're voting, and they're voting on the basis of these values we believe in. A lot of times that we think that folks that are like-minded in our family networks, they vote, they don't vote.
No, that's right.
That's number one. We've got to make sure they get to the polls and that they're informed. And number two, these county party operations need people to work these polls and need people to get involved with, you know, getting out the vote and doing things as simple as handing out the ballot and making sure that they vote on all these races. There's going to be Supreme Court races on the ballot in 2014. You need to vote for these folks.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the Republicans are in control of every element of our state, from the Supreme Court to the legislature to the governor's mansion. And unless we turn some of that back, we're going to be living a very long nightmare brought to you from Jones Street.
Got that right. What do you do? And I know everybody has somebody like this in their family. They're a Democrat, and you tell them about it. You say, "Look, that's all nonsense. You know, they're all the same, Republicans, Democrats. Hey, you know, they're going to do what they want. It's not worth my time going out there and vote. I know what they do." And you say to yourself, "They don't know what to do because they're not involved. They're just talking because they're mad. Because they have to go out there. It might be raining, and they're staying out in the rain. Why am I going to vote for somebody, and I'm not getting something back?" What do you tell people like that?
Well, that's the whole false equivalency argument, and people just start saying, you know, they're all the same. You know, somebody that's been in a bad relationship before, you know, will say that, you know, all men are bad, they're all bad. And I'll say, well, wait a minute, you know, not all your boyfriends were equivalent. You know, some of them you really loved. I mean, it's not reasonable to say they're all the same. You know, for instance, just look at who gives the money to these politicians. Yes, some Democrats get money from groups that, some of the base may not like. But when you look at the numbers, it's something like 70 or 75% of the dollars, like, from certain sectors go to Republicans. And when I played sports, if I was losing the game 75-25, we're getting slaughtered, and it's not equivalent. You right. play football and lose 75-25, nobody says, oh, yeah, they're all the same. They say one right. team ran up the score.
That's
you
right.
know, they're not all the same, and that's and that argument is a lazy argument. People like to whip out because they don't want to get involved, so they use that argument.
Well, yeah, but you know, when it's your relatives. I was talking to one relative, and he was saying, please. He said, well, my vote don't mean nothing. They already know what they want to do. It's a waste of time because they know what they want to do no matter who it is, and I never see the result. I said, but wait a minute. This is not, you know, we want everything done ASAP. You know, when President Obama
right.
got elected, there was going to be a chicken in every pot because he was the first black president. Well, it don't work that way. It's just like the right now with why didn't he close Guantanamo Bay? Well, the president has to get money to close that. And the Republicans and Democrats do not want to close Guantanamo. So he doesn't get the money. He's not going to take it out of his pocket. He doesn't have enough money to do that. So how do you convince people that, hey, look, that's not his job. He's the executive branch. That's the judicial branch that's got to do that. You know, the people don't understand.
You know, here's what I would tell people, Michael, and this is a food reference. When people
yeah.
barbecue or grill or make brisket, you know, they'll let things stew for hours and hours and hours in order to get just the exact right mixture so that, that it's dripping from the bone, right?
Very good.
That's how people know they get good food. In democracy, you need to be patient and deliberative, not act as if we live in a microwave democracy so that instantly you press a button and there's a result. It doesn't.
Okay.
You're right. It doesn't work that way, and people cannot okay. expect microwave results. We're not making microwave popcorn here.
it's just like the people when they used to make I hated it. My mother used to make cream of wheat and all that. So that was the only thing I could eat. She used to make it from the box. You had to cook it and anything else. And now you got the instant. Just put it in the daggone cup and you pour the hot milk in and it's done. You know, I didn't like it either way. You know, the cream of wheat I would eat, but it had to be very hot and I had to have a lot of sugar on it. And I don't eat it today. So, but that's what they want. They went from cooking it and mixing it to in the bowl, hot milk or water. I mean,
we're a disposable society, and even our legislating is becoming disposable, and it's all kind of formulaic. ALEC is supplying all of the bills, you know, that they're running the same things they ran in, you know, Texas, for instance, or Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. You know, what's good for North Carolina may not be good for Texas. That's why
that's
you
right.
elect local legislators, but they're taking the franchise model that businesses use and applying it to legislating,
yeah,
and thus
yeah.
we're getting the result we're seeing, and it's not a very good result.
Right, right, right.
Well, instead of actually legislating anything, they've turned into just ideologues that are pushing an agenda.
Right. Before you go, I know you're running. What is a one word you'd like to leave us with?
One word I'd like to leave you with. That's a very good question. I'd say offensive, and I'll tell you why. I take
yes.
offense to what they've been doing up in Raleigh, and I want the Democratic Party to get out of a defensive stance and into an offensive stance. So the one word for me is offensive, because it encompasses
right.
both things we're dealing with. We need to be going forward with momentum, and what they're doing in Raleigh is offensive. So it's dual meaning.
Okay. All right. One word that you can say to the people that feel they feel they're lost in the desert because they've been redistricted and they have no place to turn. They feel. What can you say about those?
Fight. You want one word? Fight. Fight.
All right, Mr. Chair.
Look. The bottom line, Michael, is this. You know, we can either cry about it and complain about it, or we can stand up on our own 2 feet and fight for it. I was taught by my grandfather and father, don't start fights, finish fights, and go out like a man on your 2 feet, not on your knees. Go out like a man.
Yeah.
Let's take it to them. That's how I feel about it.
I thank you, Mr. Randy Bola. who is a big man and can fight.
I can. Thank you very much. It's good to meet you up here tomorrow Monday, and I look forward to chatting with you again.
Very good. You got to give me a call when you're down here.
I will.
Okay. Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye.
Yeah, like Muhammad Ali there.
Yep.
He beat on for 15 rounds, and he still knocked your head off in the last minute.
That's right. Either way, we're going to be on for another 15 minutes. I wanted to play something what the Attorney General said about Texas.
Yep.
This is what the Attorney General said just a few days ago.
The Obama administration today challenged voting laws it says discriminate on the basis of race. Attorney General Eric Holder made the announcement in Philadelphia before a meeting of the National Urban League, pledging to focus first on Texas.
We cannot allow the slow unraveling of the progress that so many throughout history have sacrificed so much to achieve.
The Attorney General's declaration signaled the Justice Department's first move to protect minority voters since the Supreme Court invalidated part of a landmark Voting Rights Act last month. In its 5-4 decision, the court in effect removed a critical provision requiring states with a long history of voter discrimination to get federal approval prior to any changes in voting practices. But today, Eric Holder said his department would rely on surviving portions of the act.
We plan, in the meantime, to fully utilize the law's remaining sections to ensure that the voting rights of all American citizens are protected. My colleagues and I are determined to use every tool at our disposal to stand against discrimination wherever it is found.
And with respect to Texas, he said the state's recent history could still make it subject to federal pre-approval.
Based on the evidence of intentional racial discrimination that was presented just last year in the redistricting case of Texas v. Holder, we believe that the state of Texas should be required to go through a preclearance process whenever it changes its voting laws and practices.
Still, Holder pressed Congress to take bipartisan action to reinstate preclearance requirements.
It's incumbent upon congressional leaders from both parties to guarantee that every eligible American will always have equal access to the polls, to ensure that we will never turn our back on the hard-won progress of the last 100 years, and to consider new solutions that are equal to the challenges of the 21st century.
But the governor of Texas, Rick Perry, criticized the DOJ's move. His statement said, quote, "Once again, the Obama administration is demonstrating utter contempt for our country's system of checks and balances, not to mention the U.S. Constitution. This end run around the Supreme Court undermines the will of the people of Texas and casts unfair aspersions on our state's common sense efforts to preserve the integrity of our elections process." Officials in other southern states, once subject to preclearance, are watching the Justice Department's actions closely. Many, like North Carolina, have enacted or fast-tracked new voting eligibility rules in the wake of the Supreme Court's decision. For more on the implications of today's news, we turn to Nina Perales, the Vice President of Litigation for MALDEF, the Mexican-American Legal Defense and Educational Fund. The group is leading the legal challenge to some redistricting plans in Texas. And Hans von Spakovsky, he is a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, and he testified recently at a House Judiciary Committee hearing on the Voting Rights Act. Welcome to both of you to the NewsHour. So, Nina Perales, to you first. What do you make of the Attorney General's announcement today? How significant is this?
Well, we very much appreciate the announcement and the effort of DOJ to support our request in the Texas court that Texas be put under continuing supervision under the Voting Rights Act. It's sorely needed. Texas is the poster child for why we continue to need the protections of the Voting Rights Act, and I hope that DOJ's effort is just the beginning of continued involvement enforcing voting rights in Texas.
Sorely needed, she's saying. What's your reaction?
Well, I'm not sure that that's true, but the point of this today is that it shows the critics of the Supreme Court's decision that knocked out Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act are wrong. This shows that there are still very powerful tools in the Voting Rights Act that the Attorney General can use. And in fact, this is the right way to do it. Rather than having just blanket coverage of a number of states based on 40-year-old data, the Justice Department is going to have to go to court, convince a court, and produce evidence that Texas has engaged in discriminatory conduct and should be put under supervision based on current conditions. And that's the way it should be.
But you're suggesting that's a harder pull, a harder argument to make than it was before the Supreme Court ruling.
Well, yeah, but because the Texas was covered under Section 5 before the Supreme Court ruling based on data that was 40 years old. It was based on turnout information from the 1964, 1968, and 1972 presidential elections. Whereas now, justice will have to bring current evidence that they're discriminating and that they will continue to discriminate unless they're put under court supervision.
So, Nina Perales, explain what the challenge is in Texas that the Justice Department is saying it's going to support.
Well, the challenge has largely been litigated. We filed suit against Texas, and by we I mean various civil rights organizations in Texas sued the state over their 2011 redistricting plans. We've been able to secure relief so far, and at this point, the really important question in the case is whether Texas is going to be put under the continuing supervision of the Voting Rights Act. I have to respond to Hans in saying that, in pointing out that Texas has not made it through a single redistricting round since the 1960s without one or more of its redistricting plans for the state being struck down as discriminatory, racially discriminatory against minorities. And that was certainly the case in this round as well, where two courts found racial discrimination problems with the state's redistricting plan. So we think that Texas is perfect for the kind of preclearance obligation that was removed in the Shelby decision by the Supreme Court, but which can be restored by our federal court here in Texas if it finds that that the coverage is warranted. So she's saying Texas.
Okay. Now, that was a portion of Judy Woodruff on the PBS show that she NewsHour, that's on every day. Now, I want you to hear that sort of byplay between the young lady and the conservative who now with the Heritage Foundation was a lawyer. He said, this is the way it should be attacked. So Eric Holder is doing it the correct way. He said, because the old formula is what the Supreme Court used to throw out. They used that. They said, we're not throwing out the Voting Rights Act. We're throwing out the formula that was used. And the formula that was used was not 40 years old, where they know African Americans or minorities were allowed to vote and were being charged poll taxes to vote. Well, now that you have a lot of African Americans voting, many, many more, they will say, well, you see, they're voting now, so we don't need a Voting Rights Act. But you see, what they have done is they've now gone back and made it harder for those who to vote by redistricting them out of their district to a district where they might have to travel 25 miles to register and then come back and vote 25 miles to vote. Now, I know we did this in the past, but these people did not have to do it because they weren't allowed to vote at all 40 years ago. So this is the thing where they're going to get caught up in, the Republicans. They have now cut out the voting places in all the minority areas, and they redistricted these. That's how they cut them out. They redistricted the voting areas of minorities, and they what they call packing, which is against the Voting Rights Act also. You can't make a minority district larger and say, this will help you, because you still only get one candidate out of that voting district, unless you're going to split up the voting district and give two voting districts to minorities or three. But what they're doing is they're cutting up patches of land, whole passages, where it's like 150 miles across, and they don't have any polls. They got to travel someplace else to another county to vote. So this is where they're going to get caught up, and that's going to be against the Civil Rights Section 3.
Right. It's, again, it's putting undue burdens.
Undue burdens.
Fees and,
it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be a discriminatory.
Right.
But because you're doing it to them, it is automatically discriminatory.
Well, and even if you remember, we were talking about earlier with the Act, you know, one provision says you kind of need intent.
To right.
The other one, you don't need intent at all.
Right.
Just, if it happened.
If it's happened, it's happened.
It's too bad.
If you shot the person, you already committed manslaughter, whether you we can prove intent or not. If you run over the person.
Repressing the vote,
right.
It's wrong.
That's right.
You know,
anything that makes it harder for the person to vote is wrong.
Now, you know, they've gotten very good at this because they do it across the board. Like, you know, they can't just stop voting.
No.
But they just make it difficult.
They just make it difficult.
They can't stop abortion. It's the law of the land. But they try to make it so difficult.
Well,
close down, you know, clinics everywhere, make you drive 500 miles.
I don't know. Is it Mississippi where you only have the one voting and now they try one abortion clinic and they're trying now to cut that one out?
Yep.
Well, that would be against.
We just went to one. Our state as well. We've only got one.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm talking Mississippi. Or here, North Carolina.
North Carolina.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a, if they close that one,
mm-hmm.
it's against the.
Look, this is the game they play. They don't actually have to close it. What they do is they try to make it as inhumanly.
Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they do is, like, you know, everybody in the state now has to drive across the whole state
right. Well,
one building.
Well, but
and
the,
they're attacking the funding map.
Right. Well,
you know,
the problem is if they can't close the last one
mm-hmm.
because that would be against Roe. So they have to leave that one open and not fund it.
Yeah, I mean,
so well, you closed it. We didn't close it.
Yeah,
but you
like,
see, that might be against
it
also. That's right. Well, that might be. Technically against Roe also.
Yeah, but again, they've gotten very good at this.
Oh, yeah, well, hey,
it
took them 40 years, right?
Yeah, but even if it opens,
so they're dumb, but they learn.
Yeah, but you've got these everywhere now. You got Mississippi, Texas, everywhere
else. North Carolina,
one,
right.
Two or three clinics.
Right.
And then people have to drive hundreds of miles.
Well, you see, we need to pull up Roe. We don't have time. We only got a minute left.
Yeah,
and we got to say, happy trails to you. I'm losing my voice.
Well, it's
until we meet again. I'm not going to sing this. But all I want to say is that we had a good show today.
We did indeed.
And I didn't lose my voice to the end. But I want to go out with another Quincy Jones. And remember, you better watch out and get out and vote this year, this November. We got Patrick Cannon in Charlotte running for mayor. I'm going to have him on the show next week. He's the mayor pro tem of Charlotte. We're going to have a couple of things with him voting. And, we're going to have a couple of things with an interview with him. And we'll play it on the show next week. Remember, your influence counts. Use it.